Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today. Hey guys, welcome to the Working Class Bowhunter Podcast. Glad you could make it. The podcast is presented by Elite Archery, EliteArchery.com. And this week's spotlight elite bow would be the Elite Encore. It's the new flagship bow. Eric's shooting this bow.
That's right.
What color did you go with?
I went with the QU.
Oh, you do? That's a cool color.
Yeah, are you liking it?
I'm loving it, man. I need to start shooting it more, that's for sure. But
you did pretty good at the shoot.
I know. I was dialed in at the shoot.
Yeah, I'm ready to. I'm gonna get that mule deer target put out and just start shooting like 10 arrows every day at least. Like go out with the daughter, shoot. But if you guys are wondering about the Elite Encore, one, you can use code WCB at EliteArchery.com, make your order, and have the bow shipped to a local dealer. So one, you're getting a bow, but you're also helping your local businesses as well. The Elite Encore, 6-inch brace height, 33-inch axle to axle, it weighs about 4.5 pounds, draw length 23 to 30 inches, and you can get peak weights from 40 to 70 pounds. Of course, right or left-handed, 340 feet per second. You can pretty much get any color you want.
Yeah, lots of colors there to choose from.
I'm not shooting the Encore, but I'm shooting the Remedy, and I went with like a camo pattern again this year just to switch it up. I try to do something different every year when I get a different bow.
Yep.
But the Elite Encore is a kick-ass bow. Eric's loving it. Ross is also shooting the Encore.
That's right.
And then we're all shooting something else, but we'll talk about that in another episode. But check out the Elite Encore. Go to a local dealer, shoot it. And if you like it, you can use that code, save a little bit of money, and have it shipped to your local dealer for them to just set it up for you.
That's right.
But in fact, if you're in our area, Ross Bigger is an Elite dealer. So you could have something sent to Ross's house and have him set it up for you. Then you can talk about how good his beard looks.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win.
He puts his hands on it. It's good luck, if you ask me.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's... 200-incher makes bow tuning magical.
Does something weird to it. I don't know.
Does something weird. The podcast is also brought to you by Spy Point. Spy Point is known for their cellular trail cameras, if you will. And right now they have a sale going on, spypoint.com, the Link Micro LTE Twin V bundle. And you can get two cameras and a hat, SD cards, all the setup for $249.99.
Because the two security boxes, too.
And the two security boxes. So
good luck getting them some bait.
If you're using it as a like a security camera or, I guess, for a bear camera, we don't have to worry about that here, though.
Or someone trying to steal it.
I might have to invest in those. And I got an idea. A listener gave us a good idea for like stickers to put on trail cameras. Like if you don't have a security box, we'll get to that.
Okay.
I think we're going to do it. We got some good ideas. Really? Anyway, Spy Point. They have a ton of cell cams. We've been using the, let me break it down for you because I want to be specific because we've been using
the cell links.
The cell links. Thank you. And that just, we have a bunch of just regular trail cams and that links to your trail camera and makes it a cell camera. And we get them. I mean, they're really inexpensive actually. It's, where are they at here? Cell link $59.99 on the website, but you can look for like holiday sales and stuff like that and save yourself like 10, 20 bucks depending. And you can be into,
a cell cam, and you get to use the badass SpyPoint app, which I love.
Yep.
And then also you can join as an insider on their app, the SpyPoint Insiders Club, and they do a bunch of giveaways and stuff like that. You get special pricing on your plans and everything. So nice. No code for SpyPoint yet. Maybe that's something we can work on. But check out SpyPoint. They've been great to us. I really like their stuff. Lithium batteries, make sure everything's updated when you put it out.
Yep.
And that will eliminate a lot of headache with any cell camera that you use. The podcast also brought to you by Rogue Ridge. This is going to officially be the SpyPoint deployment vehicle.
That's right.
That's what I'm going to start calling mine, because I need to get a milk crate put on the back and there put all the SpyPoints in there and just zip through.
I got the basket, bro.
Yeah, you do have
the basket. Yeah, you're good to go.
Yep.
I think I'm too reckless on mine that I think everything's going to fall out of it when I'm like trying to haul ass. But
a couple bungee straps to bury it.
A couple bungee straps ready to go. They are awesome. I got mine fully charged for the weekend because I plan on riding mine around. We're recording these right before 4th of July weekend, so...
Yep.
Buzzing around, watching fireworks.
Getting all rowdy.
I'm not going to drink a beer and then ride it, but I might have to while I ride.
Curtis, it's illegal.
is it illegal?
I don't know. No, it's not. As long as you're not on public road, you know.
Is county roads public road?
No. Nope.
Yeah. It's not?
What?
Yeah, no, it's not.
Hey, I'm not going to. Hey, I would never. I was just kidding.
That's a joke, guys.
RogueRidge.com.
I'm waiting for it to dry up a little bit. We got a shitload of rain. Last couple weeks.
I know, it's good.
And I need to go check my camera.
It's fitting for this episode that we're going to get into here. But no, Rogue Ridge is awesome, man. And they are expensive, yes, but it's one of those things. A lot of people can't get a four-wheeler in certain spots. And if you hunt by yourself and have a long drive, like I can't have a four-wheeler or any type of like ATV vehicle at all on the main property I hunt. Mm-hmm. So this, I can get down, slip in, save me a lot of walking. Scent trail. There's no scent trail, none of that. But also you can double down and use Scent Crusher.
That's right.
Kind of back that up.
Double down.
I mean, honestly, you use Scent Crusher on your clothes. Like if you use a rapid mobile shower or pull your clothes out of a gear bag and then get on a Rogue Ridge, you're not as sweaty.
Run those zone go on the way there.
Unless you're going in X Games mode the whole way. But if you just cruise through, you got that cool breeze from hauling ass on the Rogue Ridge. And
we all know we're too fat to just pedal all the way in there.
Oh, we're fat.
We are getting fat.
Just fat and out of shape.
That electric motor's getting work and that Scent Crusher's working overtime.
That's right.
It's like anything we use, or any products that work with the podcast, like we're using them to the fullest extent. Like we're pushing the limits of these products.
Oh, yeah.
Mostly because we're fat.
It's not our fault.
It's not my fault at all.
Shout out to Scent Crusher. By the way, did you see the room clean in the bathroom here in the studio?
I did.
Yeah, I got you guys back. So
about to run that.
About to get in there. The podcast also brought to you by Old Barn Taxidermy. Be thinking about if you're confident going into this season, you should be thinking about where you're going to go for your taxidermy.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cocky move, but Old Barn Taxidermy is probably the place you should go.
I would.
It is the place you should go.
Yeah.
If you live further away and your taxidermist doesn't use Old Barn Taxidermy for their tannery, which they might already and you might not know, because a lot of taxidermists send their hides to Old Barn for their tannery.
That's right.
But if they don't and maybe your taxidermist is frustrated with like tanning his own hides, he's like, I'd rather do more mounting and less of that work.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe talk to him about sending out everything to Old Barn Taxidermy. But we'll see. I imagine we'll probably do some sort of giveaway again for working class listeners this fall. Last year, if you took a deer in there and said, hey, heard about it on Working Class Bow Hunter, and you get put in for an entry for a free mount at the end of the season.
And remember, too, like if you're not close to the area, they have a lot of drop-off points, too.
Including me. I am a drop-off. I may be thinking about trying to see if we can move the drop-off to the studio.
That'd be sweet.
I don't know. We can figure it out. We'll have to see. We might have room.
Maybe. We'll figure it out.
It'd be easier, too, since it's right in town.
It would be easier, yeah. And it's not far off the interstate. So if someone's like within an hour away and they're like, hey, I just want to get there, we can make it work. We'll figure that out. We'll keep everybody updated on that. And Douglas, I think you have a veteran shout-out, don't you?
I do.
We need a jingle.
Yeah, we should make one.
We could make one.
I can't think of that.
We could get with Chris from HHA USA and like make a jingle. It'd be kind of cool.
Maybe we'll just get Scott to sing like a jingle for us and send it to us.
Oh, God.
We get Scott to sing the national anthem. That'd be actually really, it'd be really funny because it's Scott.
Yeah.
I doubt he's got pipes on him, but.
Hey, you never know. He could.
I don't know. For how good looking he is, he might have pipes on him.
You got to have a fault somewhere. You know what I mean?
You think?
Yeah, you can't be good at everything.
When you see a hot chick, you're like, something's wrong with her.
Right.
Yeah.
Somewhere.
This vet shout out is brought to you by Operation HHA USA, and you can submit them by going to workingclassbowhunter.com. You'll see the vet shout out there, and it will go straight to me. This was submitted by Brent Carr, and the veteran is actually himself, Brent Carr. He's in the U.S. Army. Says more than a decade in the National Guard overseas deployment, multiple missions stateside, CH-47 mechanic and flight engineer. Damn. He's a firefighter on the civilian side, too. So
oh, very cool.
He does it all. Says almost a decade of hunting in Ohio, 4 years of bow hunting, dabbles in turkey hunting occasionally.
He's not full in, but which is, I don't blame him.
Yeah.
But very cool, man. That's a busy guy.
Thank you for submitting that, Bren, and thank you for your service.
Yeah, thanks for your service, man. And your service as a firefighter. That's pretty awesome. Super thankful for that as well. Like, you not only are a red-blooded American on the military side, but you're like, I'm going to be even more red-blooded and be a volunteer.
I'm going to go fuck up some fires.
I was going to say volunteer firefighter, but he might be a full-time firefighter. I don't know.
Could be.
Which is awesome. Either way.
It's pretty badass.
And I don't have the stones for that. No. I wish I did, but I hear some of the stories that I work with a bunch of firefighters, and I'm just like, man, I appreciate what you guys do, but I couldn't do it. I just don't have the balls. Honestly,
I don't like fires anyway, so
it's something I want to do, but I mean, it's the other stuff that you deal with, you know, just like helping people, which is great. I mean, I'm sure it makes some guys feel good, but that's cool. So, but thanks for your service, brother. And let's get to the episode. Hope you guys enjoy it.
I'm Chase Rawson with Rubline Marketing.
This is Jeff Lindsay.
This is Michael Pitt.
Hey, everybody, it's John Dudley from Knock On TV.
Hey, guys, this is Jared Scheffler from Whitetail Adrenaline.
Hi, I'm Taylor Drury from Drury Outdoors.
Hey, this is Nick Mutt from Bone Collector.
Hey, this is Melissa Buckman.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
You're listening to the Working Class Bow Hunter. That's right. This is a podcast for Billy Joe Lunchbucket, the working man, just like me and you. My name's Travis T. Bone Turner from The Bone Collector. Thank you for tuning in.
Nobody pushes the envelope like Working Class Bow Hunter.
It's really, really not that good.
Welcome to the Working Class Bow Hunter, episode 458. We are getting up there. Austin brought it up before we started recording. We need to think about episode 500, and it should be a big one.
It's going to be a big one.
So if you guys have ideas, throw ideas at us. In the studio right now, myself, Kurt Geyer.
Doug Schmidt.
Eric Hammond.
Austin Chandler.
Joe Humphries.
Daryl Cherry.
Big time in the house.
In the house.
This is the whole team. The entire crew right here.
The Holy Grail. That's
all both of us.
It's a two-man team. I thought you were saying we're part of the team.
Well, we are. We're on the working class team, which is represented with big time
partners.
We are partners, yeah.
First of all, thank you for your partnership for sure, and it's been great the last couple of years. You've been making some frequent appearances lately, Joseph.
Yeah, I keep on popping up. Like this time, I literally was just the Uber driver for Daryl, and I wanted to come have an old fashioned. So, I mean, it worked out. So,
well, you got thrown right into it. So, well, no, we do appreciate it, man. First of all, thank you guys for title sponsoring the shoot.
Yeah.
Everyone left with some sort of big time product.
Dude, that was a ball.
It was the perfect day. And I'm bummed that we announced the new dates. I planned it for the same weekend, and I'd realize after like the new dates got announced, it's your daughter's birthday.
Yeah, he texted me that he goes, June 11th, dude, we're doing it again. I'm like, won't be there. I'll have representation.
So I'm kind of
sorry,
like,
bro.
Get Jackson. Make sure Jake Power shows up again, though, too.
Oh, well, I mean, we could have everybody's second birthday at the shoot.
I'll bring my daughter.
Now, see, that's what I'm thinking. You just got to get her so that. Yeah, just get her so into it that she's just got to go to the shoot every
day.
Hey, I got an idea. The shooting now, so
why couldn't we have a couple bounce houses for the kids and like the water slide and all that there?
Turn to a damn carnival.
I don't know that I'm sleeping in a tent in your yard, though.
Oh, we got the studio. You stay at the studio.
The studio was full. That's why I was sleeping in your yard.
Yeah.
Well, you guys did. I mean, there's hotels. There's a lot of
other options. Yeah, I mean, we opted for it. So
yeah, but anyway, what I'm getting at is thank you guys for working with us and like seeing how dumb we are through for the bigger picture of
giving
like,
us the opportunity.
Yeah, I think he saw how dumb we are.
Well, he fit right in. Yeah. That was the only reason it worked.
But what I was getting with the shoot is there's a lot of people that might not have had any exposure to big time products. You know, being in Illinois, we don't get to use the supplemental feed. So the next thing is the food plot blends and starting at that side of the line of big time. Whereas Doug and Eric are the only guys. Can you run supplemental feed in Indiana? We've talked about this.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't. You can't hunt over it, but you can supplemental feed.
Right.
Same as Iowa. Yep.
So we're that gap in between the two states that can, yep. which doesn't make any sense. And, you know, we can get on that if we feel like we need to again. But, you know, there's certain things that a lot of people can't use that Big Time offers, which is awesome. Awesome products, not awesome if they can't use it, based on just state regulation or even sometimes county or whatever it may be. But getting back, like a lot of people that came to the shoot got to get like bags of Buck Brunch or whatever blend that they were able to grab and test it out that way. So we talk about Buck Brunch a lot. It's probably the number one product from Big Time that we discuss. Yeah. And we can get into all that here, but yeah, thank you guys for supporting the shoot and supporting the podcast and all that.
Absolutely, man. You know, we love you all. Well, not Doug. Yeah. Ever since that weekend in Iowa where I had to share a room with him, it got weird.
Yeah. Come on, man. Yeah. That was Wisconsin.
No, that was Wisconsin. Yeah. So, see, that's how bad it was.
Hey, wrong state.
He's trying to forget.
That was your fault.
We love working with you guys. I mean, we just have fun. The shoot. I mean, I actually got to go this year.
Yeah.
And I mean, we spent so much time just talking to everybody about setting plots up, you know, getting on the apps and plotting out the maps. I've only had one. Whew. Just getting there and making their plots on the maps is what I'm going at. And talking about when to plant, where to plant, how to plant. And that's really what got my wheels turning again about what the conversation we're about to have. Because, I mean, I know we've talked multiple times about we got to get Daryl in.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we'll be talking, whether in the office, about new potential products or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll just start. He doesn't even know he does it. I mean, the dude is so smart. He doesn't give himself credit.
Mm-hmm.
But he'll just throw info at me. Like, God, we got to get you on a podcast, because he'll just randomly tell you how many seeds in a pound are in for turnips. Like, yeah, there's 117,000 turnip seeds in 1 pound. I'm like, how do you... Right. How do you know that? But we'll get into that later.
He counted them.
I think it's like 268.
Yeah. He just sat there and counted them one day.
Well, so I guess that's a good place to start is, you know, that I want you to introduce yourself, Daryl, and what you do with Big Time and all that. But I know, like what Joe said, you probably won't give yourself the credit being a humble guy. So I want you to give your introduction, and then I want Joe to justify what you won't say.
Right. So I've been with Big Time now for 2.5 years.
Yeah.
And I've been in the industry quite a bit longer than that. But I came over here and basically, obviously, we've established this pretty much a two-man team. So my job description was product development and operations. But
that's how we got him sucked in. Right.
It sounded good. When you got a small team, I mean, you know, I the way I like to run it is, you know, if Joe needs something, that I'm there to help, and I think he's realized that. So, you know, we definitely, I would consider us jacks of all trades. So, but yeah,
we spend way too much time on the phone together.
Yeah, Jackson gets us all the time. Yeah. These guys still talking on the phone, but I don't live in Indiana. I don't work out of the office, so it's we have to do the best we can. But but my main priorities are developing, working with, you know, our seed growers and the folks, you know, that we develop our supplements with and our attractants with, and working on feed and just trying to come up with new products. And I do a lot of reading and research on just various things to try to generate ideas and try to stay abreast of what people are kind of, you know, what's trending, even what's trending in the ag world that, you know, that say, hey, what can we bring over that's not here yet?
But it's something you can cross over.
Like to an outdoorsman hunting market.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's it usually finds its way, but if we can, you know, it's always good to be try to be the guy that comes to it first
on the cutting edge.
Yeah,
of it,
exactly. Yeah. And that's where we want to be, but we want to be on the cutting edge, but we, you know, we talked about it. Actually this morning is something that, I've always worked really hard with. I'll go off on a tangent for a second, but,
do it.
You know, you guys were already partnered together before I ever came over here, but, with Big Time, but one thing that I've always been a big focus of mine is the common everyday guy that's out there just doing the best he can, mm-hmm. you know, which makes up the largest percentage of the hunting industry.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Especially the hunting industry of food plot, wildlife management, mm-hmm. supplements, and so on. You know, one of the things I always say is, you know, you got a guy that he might be able to sneak $20 or $30 away from his wife.
Yeah.
You know, that, you know, yeah. per paycheck, and she might not notice it, or, you know, whatnot. And
bless her heart.
He might not have the time. He might not be willing to put in the effort to, you know, do what it takes for luxurious food plots and stuff like that. But he's, you know, it's part of the fun, you know, and, so he's going to go out there and he's going to try to find a good quality seed that's going to grow for him, that, he can spend $20 on a bag of seed, and then he's got $10 worth of drinking money that he can go plant his seed. And he's got $10, and he, you know, to buy his beer. And after he's done with his labor, he can sit on the tailgate and be like, "Wow, I'm gonna drink my beer and look at my fruits here."
Hit the tavern on the way home, you know.
So, you know, I mean, you know, his, you know, that guy has his place, and you know, he shouldn't be. And one thing I think that's going on in the industry right now is a lot of good information, a lot of channels for getting information out to people, whether it be Facebook forums for food plots or podcast or, you know, whatnot. But, you know, there's a level of almost scorning that guy that's doing the best he can. And, you know, why he has his place.
Right. Know? Absolutely. Well, that's all of us, you know, really.
Exactly. And I tell Joe and that all the time. I said, we are that guy. You know, I don't have giant farms with giant tractors and everything at my disposable. And,
I'll speak for a lot of guys here is when you watch it all on TV, and I've said a lot with Joe on the podcast, is like, now that, like, we're going to dive into this here, I always feel like there's so much, you know, I'm lucky that we have Chandler in our circle. Chandler is a farmer, is what he does. So there's a lot of things like we'll bounce off him. But I feel like a lot of like food plot information, I'm so like in a way kind of intimidated by, because it seems like so much, because you see the TV guys with their giant, their New Holland or John Deere sponsorship and all that. And it seems like so much for your brain, a wage brain, that's what we call it, to absorb and like retain, because it's, I think it's not that we can't retain it, but it's intimidating. So it kind of puts that shell around the retainment of information around for us. So I feel like for me, I quickly forget food plot information because it seems so complicated for my wage brain to like absorb. I don't know.
Well, not only that, like I think a lot of people think too, like they see that on TV where they think they need that giant John Deere or they need all that equipment just to put a food plot in when that's not the case.
Not anymore.
Almost all of my plot work's done with a tractor that's less than 100 horsepower. I mean, I use a lot of small equipment for plots.
And there are people that have as good of food plots, I guarantee, that look as good as your food plots or anybody else's, and they have they're not even using a tractor.
Yep.
They're using a four-wheeler with four-wheeler implements, and they're doing the best they can for, you might have the best property in the world, but really not have it, your food plots not be really accessible to equipment other than, you know, so it's, you know, I think one thing that needs to be, you know, made a prominent point is do the best you can, you know, strive like anything else, but strive to do it right. And, you know, and to make it the best, but at the end of the day, make it fun for you.
Yeah.
You know, just do your best.
Yeah,
give it the effort, and then you will then be rewarded and get more out of it. You know, it's just like if you've patterned a nice deer and you've moved all the pieces around, and you end up killing that deer, he's going to mean more, and he's going to have more of a story that you're never going to forget. Versus if you just go happen to sit on a stand and he walks out, and you're like, "Oh, where'd he come from?" Bam!
Right.
I mean, there's lots of different ways to look at it. So, I mean, definitely. I think that, you know, when you can enjoy the fruits of your labor, you're always going to get. I mean, that's just human nature. I think you're going to get way more out of it.
It seems like it helps a lot too, because some of my plots I can use tractors, but a lot of them are just a weed eater and a 5-gallon sprayer on my back, you know, and. Them plots mean
fill
a lot
it up
more.
In the creek when you got her.
Oh yeah, them plots mean a lot more when you can actually go in there. You weed it all.
Well, it's crazy how effective they can be too.
Oh yeah,
you don't need big equipment to bring a large number of deer or the right deer to your plot. It doesn't Absolutely. Take massive equipment to do it. I mean, some of my most effective plots are small little kill plots that are tucked way back in that there's no option to get equipment back in there.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, those are sometimes the most effective.
Yeah.
Well, all right, let's start here. Cause I want the average working class guy to listen to this podcast and kind of either if he didn't realize it before, he or she didn't realize it before, like, oh, like this is more attainable than I thought. It doesn't cost me that much money. So let's just say the average small piece, Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Midwest, wherever you may be in whitetail country, most people are hunting small pieces of private. And the idea is put a plot in that you can put in to retain deer, whether it is early season, mid season, late season, whatever that may be. Wherever you think we should start with this, we'll follow your lead with that. And then we'll just start with the breakdown. So, I mean, should we just put out like an example size farm? Say a guy's got 60 acres. Is that like fair, like a middle ground farm or something? I don't know how you want to approach it.
I think one of the easiest ways to look at that is that whether it be 60 acres or 2,000 acres is, you know, trying to attain a goal of 2 to 5% of your 2 to 6 or 7, you know, probably don't need more than 10%, but in food.
Okay. Meaning okay. Food. That's a better way to look at it.
And so that, you know, you break that down and you know, if you're starting from some virgin ground per se, you know, then you go in there and say, you kind of know how your plots are going to be made, size wise and so on. And to branch off of that, I mean, you know, when you're going in there to make plots and all, always have a strategy.
Think ahead.
Create a strategy. Obviously, you know, it's written and said all the time, you know, as far as entry and exit, wind directions, how are you going to, I mean, you can go in there and have the best plot, but if you can't hunt it on, you know, certain winds or you can't get to it without blowing deer out, it's not going to be.
So that brings up a really good point. I had a lease. I had an 80-acre lease for a few years, and it was a hard property to access in general. And we put a couple, we did buck brunch plots, which grew amazing, and deer were hitting them. But you couldn't, that's one thing. Like, we are kind of bound by access with this. So I think that is really important and probably worth going into some detail on. Like, you know, you can't just be like, oh, right there's a good spot. I'm going to put it in there. And then you realize, oh, shit, I can't. Yeah, deer are hitting it. But every time I walk in there, I don't see deer. Well, it's because right. When you walk in, you're bumping deer and you're not seeing them. And then they're hitting right after you leave in the dark or whatever.
Or blowing them out.
Yeah.
Because you can't get out.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, we just had that conversation on the way here. We were on a new track that an acquaintance of ours just received. It's 1,400 acres about an hour south of here.
Mm-hmm.
And we were looking at some beautiful ground and great plots where they're going to put them. But you're passing up four other plots to get to that one. I mean, how many deer are you going to booger out of there?
Yeah, you might not hurt those plots. Plot. You might not hurt those plots for the plot you're hunting, but then you go to hunt those other plots and you didn't realize walking by them on the way in to hunt your other plots, you just trash mm-hmm. your future hunts on those plots. Mm-hmm. So that's a good point too. So, I mean, really it's, you need to think about everything.
Well, and now, you know, something too that has become more and more popular, the last several years is, you know, helping with getting in and out of a plot is planning items like borderline. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's one of the whole reasons we came out with our own product. I mean, there's quite a few of them on the market, but, the point of that is that you're gonna, you know, you can create the cover you need to literally get in and out of the field potentially with deer in it
mm-hmm.
and they never see you, you know, that's not an unreasonable thing to do.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it can happen. And
you can take areas like what I do, areas that are typically hard to get in and out of, whether it be, you know, a ravine, a river, just natural topography. If it's not there, you can take a flat area and use that screen to get in and out. It lets you put plots in areas where normally it'd be tough to put a plot in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You create like an edge.
Yep.
Which, I guess let's go back. Let's start breaking this down because I like the access thing is, I mean, probably the most important number one rule of where you put a plot. And borderline, that makes more things, like you just said, Chandler, accessible. And that's something, when I had this lease, I didn't have access to that yet. But that could have changed a lot for us on that property, is having borderline. We could have planned it certain ways for our entry and exit, and thinking about wind direction, all that going into the plot. That's got to be number one, right? In your head, do you think access is, it's got to be.
If you can't get in there, you're not going to, you know, your chances right. go down considerably.
I mean, that's number right. one for just hunting, not just food plots. You know, yeah. it's all about access.
Right. So, okay, a guy plans out, and I'm thinking this is going to get people thinking a little bit more about it. They're like, okay, I'm thinking about my property. I'm walking in and out, wind direction, calculate that in. They find the spot that works the best for their property. What's the next step? Like, just assuming Midwest, or, I mean, is it fair to say the Midwestern properties and into the East Coast? It's, I know the blends are going to vary a little bit on what seed they should plant, but.
Well, you know, in, not to go, we'll get into that later, but, you know, not to go too far.
I'm trying to step
road.
This through, sure. But my when intelligence
we,
level's low.
When we put, when we work to put the mixes together, you know, you're having to create a mix that hopefully can canvas north to south, you know, east yeah. to as far west as you, you know, somewhat in Kansas, I guess you'd say would be yeah. about as far away they're going to go.
Not the Milk River area? I'm kidding. We were watching the Milk River videos before we got in.
They grow alfalfa, so you should be able to grow a food plot.
Hey, that's a good point.
But no, it, you know, so to keep from having to have northern blends, southern blends, and all that, you know, we're doing the best we, you know, that you can to do that. It's just not really feasible mm-hmm. to have all the other SKUs yep. the way that seed works. But to your point of what's the first thing, always. Food plot, always number one thing. Soil test.
See, you know, I admit fault on that. I'm bad with it,
and it is a fault. Not to scorn anybody, which we were just talking about. Not to, you know, but there's so many different advantages for taking a soil test that people need to understand. Meaning, one, you can save yourself a lot of money. By doing a soil test, because you know exactly, you know, and not all soil tests are created equal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our soil test that we sell up through our website, it's and this is thrown around a lot, but it's true, is it's a laboratory soil test. It's not a probe. It's not a slurry. It is going to a lab, and they are going to, you know, tell you exactly what's going on in your dirt. So that truly is the best way to find out, you know,
which in turn, you know, a soil test, like what kind of things can a soil test tell you?
Well, that's kind of a loaded question.
I bet.
I mean, I know. As a farmer, I can answer a part of it. pH is one of the main things. You want your pH in an ideal range, which what are you looking at? Like 6.5?
6 to 6.5, 6 to 7. And that, if you can get it in that 6 to 7 range, the stuff that we're planting for food plots is going to thrive in that. And
why we're on the pH thing, what is that? What does that mean?
Alkalinity of the soil.
Yeah.
So you don't want it too acid. You don't want it too basic.
So 7 is neutral.
Yep.
Okay. On a scale of 1 to 14, 7 is neutral.
Okay.
On the bottom side of that is going to be acidic, and the top end of that is going to be alkaline, which you don't see too often in food plot world, you know, where most of the food plots are getting, but acidic soil you see all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so lime,
is acidic soil more common in certain areas than it is in other places?
Pretty much. Yeah. I mean, as far as, most people, like I said, where your heaviest population of people planting food plots, they're going to deal with acidity mm-hmm. more than anything else. And so lime is your correcting agent to bring you back, you know, basically bringing it back to neutral. And the benefit or the negative of being too acidic is simply nutrient uptake.
Mm.
The more acidic the soil, the more the nutrients are going to get bound up in the soil, and plants simply can't take it up. And
it just doesn't make it to them.
Moral of the story is you can go out there and fertilize as much as you want, but if your pH isn't right, the plant's not going to uptake those nutrients. So step number one is check your pH. Okay. And then once you get your pH dialed in with lime, then you go in and you start looking at your macronutrients like N, P, and K. As a farmer, that's what I look at. Yep. And then you got some micros.
What the hell is that? N, P, and K?
Nitrogen, N, phosphorus, P, and potassium, K.
In that order. So when you're looking at a bag of fertilizer, your first number on the, you know, you're going to see, let's say 13, 13, 13.
Right. And that's like kind of, a general.
There can be all signs. Right? Yeah. You know, triple 10. Everybody knows 10, 10, 10. You know, that's your grandma's garden fertilizer, if you will, you know, but, and it works. I mean, you just, your soil test is going to tell you the pH, tell you how much lime you need. And to Austin's point, if you're putting out fertilizer and not putting out, you know, getting your pH right, which is a very common thing, because I think it's what I call the home and garden, not to name names, mentality of marketing is just load her up with fertilizer and make it green. Well, that's all, you know, well and good if you're growing grass, although you know your pH is, your grass is still a plant in your yard. It's still going to be pH dependent, but
pour a bunch of hog shit on it. It'll grow.
Yeah. I mean, you know,
usually it's going to work if your pH isn't like super out of whack, but you just have to check that first to make sure your pH isn't like,
before you go dumping money into a bunch of stuff and not knowing that.
And lime is a lot cheaper than fertilizer.
Yep.
So, okay, this might seem dumb, but I don't want to count anybody out. There's no dumb questions here for everyone listening. So if you're thinking something, I'm with you probably.
That's because we're all dumb.
We're idiots.
We're right next to you.
Wage brain, baby. Where does it, so say the pH is out of whack. Where does a guy get lime?
Good question. Same thing with can apply here with fertilizer too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look out there, and a lot of times people just go to your co-op.
Well, yeah, I hear that.
There's not a co-op around every corner,
right? Right. And what's a co-op? A lot of people are probably asking that too.
Yeah, local, I guess you could say farm and ag store, not your local. Necessarily your local farm and home store, but you know, or Lowe's or Home Depot or something like that. It's going to be somewhere that's going to mix up. They're going to be working more directly with your farmers and stuff like that, and they'll have some, you know, depending on co-ops vary, but I mean, if they have a storefront, they're probably going to have some bagged fertilizer here and there and that kind of stuff. But you know, they can mix up specialty blends and all that. However, you know, and you can get what we call ag lime, you know, and get them to spread it, or, you know, if you've got a spreader, which is, you know, a very costly piece of machinery to, you know, to put ag lime out, you know, but if you don't have that, you know, you can go buy pelletized lime in a bag. It's a little bit more expensive because it's been through a process to allow it to.
For application.
Yeah, for application, and you're paying for a bag, you're paying for, you know, the extras. But it works.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's nothing wrong with doing that.
Is a bag, as you know, say a guy's got a acre and a half plot or an acre plot, like is lime gonna kill him? You know, does a guy need to be scared about, man, if I do the soil test, I'm gonna know I'm gonna need to buy all this lime and I'm worried about like the money I'm gonna end up dumping into it. I bought the seed. I bought my beer. Now I got to go get lime, and now I got to do this. Like, is that going to be
old
like
lady's going to be pissed? Yeah, lime is still going to be the cheapest thing you do.
Okay, that's what I was getting at.
And if you get your pH more in line,
you have a way better pot,
and you can skimp on your fertilizer a little bit because you're going to be getting a better nutrient uptake.
Okay.
So if you're running lean on cash flow, then spend your money on your lime and cheat a little bit on your fertilizer. Would you agree with that, Austin?
Yeah. One thing I would say is sometimes lime wise, you have to put a large amount of product on. So if you're in a spot where you're using a hand spreader for fertilizer, that might not work so well for lime if you have to put a large tonnage of lime on. That's why I recommend checking with your local co-op if you can find one. If you're in an ag area, there's going to be a co-op somewhere.
Like FS or something like that?
Yeah, we have FS, Diamond Ag, Nutrien. I mean,
Cirrus Solutions are around us anyway.
Yep. So if you are lucky enough to be close to a co-op, like my co-ops, maybe it's because I'm already a farmer and they know me, but they just let me use their fertilizer buggy. So a lot of places, if you're buying product from them, you can rent or use their little fertilizer buggy, put it on the back of a tractor, go in, spread your plots, and you're done, which saves you a lot of headache in the end.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yep.
Interesting.
A lot of times, if access is easy, I mean, you guys have seen the test plots that we have at the plant, and, I mean, they'll just come spread it for us once we tell them, after we do the soil test, and we'll get into more details of the soil test here shortly, but, you know, we tell them what we need. They pre-mix it, come right down, spread it, and it... I mean, that 7 acres, I think last year on the fertilizer was $300.
Yeah.
And it was also, and that was the entire,
and like, 7 acres is a lot for the average guy. So,
I mean, and that was him driving out into the field, spreading it all out and hitting me because I was trying to take pictures of him while he was doing it. He was loving that part. He kept on doing circles around me.
Well, if you're fortunate to have a co-op that's successful and you have access to wherever your plots are going to be, that is definitely a more economical way to have them come out there and apply it for you. Or if you've got a tractor and you can rent a buggy, you know, then, you know, you can obviously utilize the buggy and pull it yourself. But, yeah.
A guy could spread it by hand if he had to.
Yeah. It's just, you know, it's
probably not ideal, but
it's not that it's not ideal. It's just more work.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's just not as efficient.
And, I did that on our borderline the other day.
Yeah.
We had a good rain coming in.
Yep.
And we were on the phone. I'm like, I got to go. I get out there and get this spread. I mean, and we did the entire length of that entire 7 acres this year, 18 feet wide in borderline. So you cannot see it at all from the highway anymore.
Beautiful.
And it's going to be completely blocked from the plant side, too.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. Dope. It's going to be really sweet.
So you spread lime by hand? Is that what you're saying you did?
That was fertilizer.
Fertilizer.
I mean, I had a shoulder spreader, and I mean, I kept on going down and back, and I knew how much I needed. And just kept on going till it was gone, and I'd move the truck when I needed to, and just kept on going.
Okay, so, sorry, I mean, I'm learning with everyone. I'm assuming, you know, there's a lot of people who listen that might know a lot of this information, but I don't like to assume that. I like to assume that nobody knows anything, because I feel like I don't. So once you do your soil test, that gets you in your pH, and sounds like pH is most important. So you want to be around 7. That's what I'm gathering, because that's neutral, right?
Six to seven.
So set, you get your pH right. And that means, and I'm trying to follow, I'm recapping, making sure I'm absorbing this. The plants are able to absorb the nutrient, basically get their full potential from the soil that way.
The dirt.
Whereas if it's too acidic, they don't get the full potential of the nutrient from the soil and all that. Okay, so what's next? You got your, what'd you guys call it, the NP and K? And then, so where do you go from there? So we know the lime can level out your pH. What do you do to control the rest of it? The MP and K, like, where do you start there? If
so that's something your results are going to come back and tell you where your pH is at and what your recommendation is. And they're going to also come back and tell you what your NP and K recommendations are also. So they're going to.
Doug's talking to me here. What?
I'm on here. Doug's trying to tell me what I'm doing about recording wrong.
Hey, we're here. So,
got to keep him in check.
Hey, Daddy's got, I appreciate you looking out.
Yeah. But no, your NP and K's, you know, recommendations are going to be on there. And, you know, and we've got it set up to where they're going to give you those recommendations per the crop that you're planting. So if it's a big time product, and you can list that out when you send your soil test analysis in, and they, you know, when it comes back, they're going to give you recommendations specifically for what you're planting.
Okay.
So, you know, they're going to give you, you know, the,
so there's no guessing really.
Also, yeah. It's like, he did a phenomenal job setting that up to where, you know, it tells you your deficiencies or overages. And then, you know, if you're going to do foundation, you check foundation, mm-hmm. or, you know, lockdown, long, whatever brand or whatever product it is you're going to use from us. If you don't know, you just check them all. So it tells you what you need, but it also gives you the recommendation to put on there to correct that. I mean, that was a, when I looked
for
at that
product,
for that product.
Right.
And if you listed all of them, it gives you a list of every single one. This is what you do for clover. This is what you do for peas. This is what you do for wheat.
Because if you're planting foundation clover, it's not going to be the same recommendation.
Okay.
As you, if you're playing long range.
Well, that makes sense. But I'm glad we covered that, because I don't know how I was thinking it worked. That shows how much experience I have with soil test kits.
Well, and that's what you can do too. You can check all the boxes and be like, okay, maybe this, you weren't sure what you're going to plant, and maybe you are on a budget. What's going to be the cheapest route here, and what can I plant on the cheapest route?
It'll paint a broad spectrum for your ground. So if you go do this soil test and you check all the boxes, it'll say, well, if I use this product, I need this. And if I use this product, I need this.
Right.
It'll paint that picture to say, well, my property overall is kind of potassium deficient, so I need to go in there and spread. If I'm going to spend any money, I want to spend it on this, and I want to get my potassium levels up, my potash levels up. So that's, I guess that's the way I look at it as
the
a
last,
farmer.
The last number in the fertilizer.
Yeah. The, so out of the three, the potash should be the last one. Which, yeah. Anyways, I guess that's what I'm saying. It'll paint, it'll kind of paint a broad picture for you of what your fertility is in your soil.
Okay. One thing I want to get to, and maybe we talked about it, but my wage brain didn't absorb it. How do you take a soil test kit? The one specifically from Big Time. By the way, you can use code WCB2021. Save yourself some money.
I got screamed at the other day because on the website, you know, I get the messages. This dude's on there. He's like, dude, I'm doing WCB21. It's not acting. What the hell's going on with those guys? I'm like, it's 2021. And I was listening to the last podcast. You said WCB21.
Oh, my bad.
That
guys.
Was on you. I told Oof, my bad. I said, Kurt's a dumbass. All right, I'm done.
Kurt's a dumbass.
That's all I had to say.
I got two messages today about it. So my bad, guys. My bad. WCB 2021.
When you go on the website, you're going to purchase that and you're going to receive a sheet that's going to come emailed to you, and there are instructions with graphics and so on the
it's a picture book.
Is there pictures?
Ooh,
there is a picture.
So I can use this.
That's what we like.
It's a coloring book.
It's for the working book class hunter. Hey, listen, customer.
Hey, can I just do this? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you for what you do.
But but they can be, you know, your samples can be pulled if you go as far as to, they make probes to run in the ground that are going to pull out cores and then, you know, you could literally go out there with a spade and just dig up your sample. You're going to want to take probably, you know, at least probably 6 inches of soil there. At least I would recommend, basically where you're thinking about where your root zone is going to be starting out that plant.
Yeah.
But then, you know, one thing that's key is you need to, if you've got a half acre food plot here per se, and you're going to need to take multiple samples from all over that field, and you can't just go out there and say, well, I got, you know, here's my sample, I'm going to go, because you can literally be in this spot and in the same field walk over here 20 yards and it could be completely get something. So basically what you're doing is you're pulling samples from the whole field, putting it together, and you're going to get an average for that plot, essentially, is what's going on.
Get the grass out, no debris.
If you can clean it up, if it's really wet when you're trying to do it, maybe let it dry out for a day or two. So it's
just an old penny in it.
What?
Just an old penny in it.
Some old change in there or something.
A little treasure.
We're idiots.
How'd that go for us? Nah,
thanks, Doug.
It's an old penny.
And I've heard
your soil's high in nickel.
I've heard high copper concentration there.
About 5 cents.
It's 5 cents worth of copper. That's not even right. It'd be 1 cent worth of copper. I've heard the recommendation, sending in about 2 pounds worth of soil. I don't know that matters, because I can tell you that, all the samples I've sent has been all kinds of grades of variances of different weights or whatnot. But but the key thing is getting a good sampling across the whole field so that you can get that a more accurate average.
So if you have like an acre plot, how many tests are you going to take in an acre?
I'm going to take quite a bit. I mean,
like 5, 10.
I'm going to take probably 14 to 20.
Yep. Okay.
I really am. I'm going to,
samples for one test, right?
Yeah. Not 14 to 20 tests.
No. Yeah.
For the one test.
Soil pulls, to put in my bucket to blend.
Can we talk about the price of the soil test, and then you'll get money off with the code? That way people, we can't talk about that?
No, we can't talk about
it. But I want to get people, because I don't want people to get wrapped up being like, oh man, that's going to cost me $200 to get a soil test.
No, it's only available on the website, bigtime.com. You go to the food plot section in the shop. The soil test is $14.99. And like Daryl was saying, we email it to you, so you print it off, fill it out, do your test. You get a Ziploc baggie and put all your soil in. You do need to mail it off. So it's $14.99 from the website, and whatever it costs, $1, $2, whatever it is.
Yeah, okay.
To ship it, that's it.
Okay. I just want to cover
and
that.
And that does, the discount does apply, so you're going to get $3 off of that.
So you're looking at less than $20 to do this sample.
And with the added later benefit of the amount of money that you can't put a price tag on, because you don't know of what it could save you on lime and fertilizer.
And if you didn't spend that $16, planted and everything, and nothing grew, you're going to shit talk us because you think we have a bad product.
That's a good point.
Of course.
That's a good point.
In reality, you can have the best seed in the world, and if you didn't do this step, it's not going to grow.
We do have the best seed in the world.
That's true.
There,
thank you, Daryl.
But nice. It's always
you
a
have
seed
the best fault. Seed in the world. It's always a seed.
Oh, yeah.
You know, whether you get too much rain, bury the seed, it's always a seed.
Well, if you don't know, that's what you think.
True. Yeah, absolutely. You know, that is.
That's why we're here. We're trying to change that, I hope. I'm learning
change
a lot.
Change the culture.
It changed the culture.
So with that $20 test, how many acres can you do with that?
$15 test.
$15
minus
test.
$3 with the code.
Yes.
Get it right off.
We're whittling this thing down.
We're giving
just
them away.
Here. So how many acres can you do with that? Like, if I have a 200-acre plot, can I do that for $15?
You could.
We're going to have a lot of samples to pull and to get an average of that. But
in a 55-gallon drum of dirt.
I'm sending it to you guys.
That's where you're going
to
lose money when you ship the 55-gallon drum.
Just give it to Joe.
Let me see if I understand this. It just gets less accurate the bigger area you're testing.
Yeah, I mean, essentially that's a good way to put it. And, you know, just because you're just painting a water, you're just kind of hoping a little
it's
bit.
More generalized.
Yeah. I would say, you know, I would speak it more in terms of really realistic terms of what our customers are typically doing. So, you know, a half acre to a 2-acre plot, you know, that's going to be your standard range of your most average food plots, or even less. But I would say, you know, consider that to be that one single plot, you know, that would be my recommendation.
Yeah. I'm going to bring up a good point. You can't buy one test and print it out 20 times and send in the same one because we have it coded. So you can't just use the same one over and over and over. You need to buy
it. God damn it. You're a step ahead of me.
They're numbered. So yeah, I knew where you were going with that.
Well played.
Thank you.
Hey, I got a couple thousand acres I need to get soil tested. So.
Yeah.
$15 doesn't sound too bad.
The lab calls. We just had 80 food plot soil tests come back.
From Austin Chandler.
From Mr. Chandler.
Who is Lord?
The Lord.
But that's the Lord's dirt. Don't mess with it.
We do have to say that this was actually done by a good friend of ours.
Yes, it was.
He didn't do it intentionally, but instead of printing off all the ones he had gotten, he just kept printing the same one. And he sent all the same one, but he had 7 sitting there, but he only used one for 7 samples.
Right.
His name's Randy, and he'll be here soon. I'll be here with him. We'll call
so
him
we gotta
out.
Give him, gotta give him some shit when he comes in, huh?
Damn it, Randy.
God forbid.
So technically, he did buy all the kits. He just printed out the same sheet.
Yeah. It didn't go over well when it got to the lab.
No.
So when you guys are looking at these soil tests, are they mostly just macronutrients that you're looking at, or do you guys look at like sulfur and zinc? And
yeah, I mean they're on there, but we don't go into in depth. I mean, obviously not that they don't matter because they do, but I think in real world food plot, yeah, I mean, you know,
get the macros in line and
yes,
then you're good shape
and it's pH, and I mean that's going to cover the basics of it. I mean, you know, when he starts elevating that game, if you will, and he, you know, to those guys, they're gonna know to, you know, be looking at that. But for the 90% of the food plotters, that pH and NPK is going to cover their bases for sure.
Okay, let's move on to the next step, if you will.
Let me reel back one second.
No, I'm following your lead,
man. When you get the your soil test back and you see, and I know this is a very frustrating, confusing, and even intimidating, because food plotting is intimidating to most guys because, quite frankly, you're asking them to be a farmer and they're not.
Yeah.
But you're going to get a recommendation, and it might be, I just went round and round with a customer last week, not in a negative way, but just trying to help him out because he, you know, his soil test said you need 15 units of nitrogen, 30 of phosphorus, and 15 of potassium. He was like, well, I can get this, this, and this. You're going to get a recommendation from the soil test, but a lot of people get really, really hung up. Like, I can't find this anywhere. They don't make this fertilizer. And, you know, what am I going to do? I mean, my back's up against the wall. I can't, you know, just forget this. I don't want, you know, and they get really frustrated. And, you know, and there are, what I tried to help with this customer is looking at it from the most economical way with, I said, what do you have available to you? And, he gave me a couple and I said, well, you know, here's what we got. We can use all of these that you have, but you're going to have overages here. You're going to have shortages here. So you're just trying to figure out to, you know, get as close to the bar that's there as you can. But don't get hung up in the weeds that, and try to say, you know, be economical about it, you know, cause one of the fertilizers he had would have to get his, nitrogen and potassium requirements, he was going to put him at 90 pounds over on his, he was going to, you know, that's a waste of money. And
there's so many different analysis out there. You just have to find the one that works well for you, and you can get separate ones. Like you can get one that's heavy in phosphorus and one that's heavy in nitrogen and one that's heavy in potash. And then you can just
build it.
You can build your own. I mean, you don't have to buy that exact blend. Don't get too hung up on hitting those numbers on the head, I guess, is the point you're trying to make.
Well, I think that's what people are thinking when they get that test back. They're like, okay, I need these exact numbers.
100%.
I need these exact numbers.
That's telling you pounds that you need per acre, basically.
Right. Gotcha.
And you see it all the time. And I think that it's, I think it's just another level of frustration that can be added to a guy and
who's already busy.
And we don't, you know, and you know, he's like, well, what am I going to do? And I mean, of course, you know, we also put on our bags a general recommendation of, you know, if you don't do a soil test, here's a recommendation. But the problem with that, you can do it. But the problem with that is you could be wasting a whole lot of money.
Because you don't actually know.
You don't know what you're just blind throwing it out there, and it'll work, but you might, you know, you not knowing what's going on in your soil is, you know, you could be spending a lot of extra money. You could be putting a lot of waste out there. And I mean, sometimes, you know, some of these fertilizers, you don't want running off into your ponds or streams or various things.
No, it's not
good
for the environment to over-fertilize if you don't have to.
So, you know, not just, you know, if we're food plotting and we're, you know, the word of the day is being land stewards and all that, then it's something to think. I mean, you should think about it. And
I think a lot of people probably don't know that, you know, because they just haven't had experience around fertilizer and all that. There's a lot I don't know.
Certainly.
You know, about fertilizer. And I work in the ag industry, really. I have some fertilizer stuff that's coming up in my career. I'm about to learn a lot. I know it's corrosive.
And
that's about all I know about it. But that's a good point, though. You know,
so I just wanted to get that out there that, you know, since we're talking about soil tests so much, and is that, you know, it's, those are recommendations. They're not,
don't be discouraged by it.
They're not written in stone. It's just your guiding tool to look at. There. And then, you know, use the resources you have available. And, you know, and like Austin said, you know, you might have to go buy a 3400, you might have to go buy a 0060 or something, you know, and blend it together. It, that's very, you know, food plotting, you're not, you're going to get out what you put in. Being lazy is not going to get you very far if you're wanting good quality plots. So, you know, but at the same time, if, you know, if someone gets our, you know, does our soil test and they're planting our plots and they have a question, I mean, obviously they can call us and we'll be glad to walk them through it.
Yeah, you're not leaving anyone out to dry.
No, definitely not. And if we, you know, if they do feel that way, it's not intentional. We're there to help and, you know, respond to them and do the best we can.
And for the record, Joe does a great job with running the big time social media on all platforms, even if you're on TikTok. And what's up, Joe? And I mean, it's there, though. You know, even if you're a young kid, most young kids are on TikTok now. If you're a 14-year-old kid who your grandpa owned some ground, he said, do your thing, and you're trying to figure it out, that might be, I mean, we joke around, but that might be the spot he reaches out to you on, on TikTok.
Honestly, there's a lot of questions that, you know, we get to a point where I'll start having a conversation with a customer, and I'm to the point where, like, you know what, I'm going to bring in the big guns. I'm going to bring in the food plot Jedi, and I'll be like, hey, Daryl, you know,
you take this over for me.
I'll take a screenshot of you know, whether it's an email or what, and let him reach out to them. And then they'll start going off, and then he calls me. He's like, dude, I was on the phone for 4 hours. It was good, though. It was good.
Yeah, not that it's a problem.
I mean, it's a good thing. Turn around.
But, I mean, we enjoy doing that, too. I mean, and then
it's part of it.
Then, you know, we get the success stories back.
And I can tell you that when you get the chance to talk to customers, not only is it beneficial for the customer, it's been, I mean, I look at it as beneficial to me. It helps me stay on top of and keep it at the front of my mind so that I can, you know,
right.
roll well, it that, off better. I mean, you know,
this sheet that I sent to Daryl and Kurt before we got going, I was like, these are the topics and discussions that we have on a daily basis is what we're basing this off of.
From
today.
The people.
Right. From the people, from you.
Yeah.
And, I was an extensive list, but I was like, this is what people want to know, and this is what they want to hear about.
That's why we've been talking about soil test and like the breakdown of it for 50 minutes, because this is that important.
I told you this was going to be a long one.
And I'm all in. I'm learning a ton, actually. Go ahead, Eric.
I got a quick question. Like, we don't have to stay on too long, but do you have like a background in this, or where do you – how did you learn all this shit?
I love Eric's just like bluntness.
I just say good teacher, something like that.
Good teacher.
I've had the luck of being around some people that were willing to help me in my past, and had a lot of knowledge, more knowledge than.
And you're clearly passionate.
Yeah, I enjoy it. You know, I do, and it's, you know. I didn't go to school for ag or anything like that.
That's surprising with how knowledgeable you are.
Right. I would have figured you would have a degree in something in this.
No,
in
I
this
don't.
Field.
But it's just, hopefully it shows that you don't have to.
Right. No, honestly, that's
it's,
better.
You know,
better,
if you are passionate about something and willing to put a little bit of time and research, and I mean, you know, so much is at our fingertips nowadays mm-hmm. that, you yeah. know, you can educate yourself.
Dude, a degree nowadays is a $40,000 piece of fucking paper. You can get right. whatever you want to get the way yeah. you got to get it nowadays. You know what I mean? It doesn't mean anything.
And I can guarantee you a piece of shit don't mean nothing.
What you got there is a
guarantee. YouTube U has taught me a lot of things.
What's that?
YouTube U has taught me a lot of things. Yeah, but,
you know what's funny? I talked to this side note here. When we first got to know Chip City.
Yep.
And Chip City's worked with Big Ten for a long time.
Yep.
I talked to him about his skills in editing, because he's on his route to the Outdoor Industry Hall of Fame for being a producer.
He's a madman.
Yeah. And I was talking to him. I'm like, dude, where'd you go to school to like learn all? He's like, YouTube. Yeah. I'm like, dude, you can learn anything on YouTube. That's where I learned everything is on YouTube. I'm like, wow. Okay.
I remember him telling us that he was like editing on like two VCRs where you could like take one tape and put on another one and all this shit. Yeah. I'm like, that's so bizarre to me.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, you know, to your question, I was given chances, and, you know, my own passion plays into it and all that too. But, you know, I was given chances and I was put in position to be around some very knowledgeable people, and I did the best I could to absorb what I can and still try to, you know, I think the key too is never, like anything, don't stop trying to learn. And,
yeah.
You know, I can probably learn a whole lot by the man sitting beside me too. So, and,
yeah.
I doubt that.
But you know, and I, you know, and just, you know, something too though is don't fake it.
Yeah,
nobody knows everything,
right?
And you know, and every no situation is universal for every single thing. So
yeah, definitely.
You know, if you don't know it, be honest and say, hey, let me get back to you. And
you look a lot dumber if you act like you know it. And you
right.
Don't.
And
the only way you'll learn is ask questions and, yeah, and fail.
Absolutely.
You know? So let's shift from the soil test thing and let's get into, and I don't know the next step, but I'm going to throw like the spring versus fall plot thing out there. And because the guy's, he's thinking about a spot, he's got his axis in his brain where he wants to start putting a plot in. And then the next question is like, all right, here's my area. Do I do a spring plot or do I do a fall plot? Do I do both? Where do you even tackle that for a guy?
So to Joe's exact question, pros and cons of spring planting, right?
Yeah. Are you guys going to do a beer run? Yeah.
We're going together.
I'll go into the bathroom together.
I'll take a beer, and if you want to mix an old-fashioned, you can, but I won't make you.
You're feeling dangerous. You gave me one, now you want me to mix you.
Mix me one, Joe. Try me, buddy. You're in our house, and you're normally the guy feeding me whiskey.
Anyone else?
I'll have a couple beers too. I'm fueled in for the long road here, man.
Milwaukee.
If they're cold, bring me an old Milwaukee.
They're definitely not cold yet.
I'm going for it.
Oh, all right.
I'm going for it. Hey, we're here.
No, I think it plays back to, again, it's just the overall creating a strategy and, you know, what are you wanting to get out of your property? You know, what mm-hmm. do you have available? You might, if you've got one plot that you're able to do on a parcel, if it's small or something, you know, are you looking for year-round nutrition? If you are, then you need to probably look at, you know, getting that ground sweetened up and putting a perennial in, and, you know, understanding now that a perennial is going to be more work.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the amount of food you get out of the, you know, you're putting out year round traction in there. And just because it's, you know, if it's clover, if it's a mix of alfalfa, chicory, clover or whatever.
I feel like clover is like the most common.
Clover's
you hear
king,
about.
You know, Clover's king. I mean, you know, whenever, I mean, people think food plots, they say, well, you know, I need to put a clover plot in.
Yeah.
And I think that's a mistake too. I mean, I think to what we're talking about is, if you're not willing to put in the time to maintain that clover and get the soil right and all that, you're probably wasting your time.
Falling short.
And so, you know, if you're looking at it, well, all I want to do is draw in deer in the fall and during hunting season, then I would probably advise you to plant an annual. You know, do you want it to be something that's going to be kind of a full encompassing, you know, beginning to end food type food plot, like our long range or lockdown or buck brunch, you know, where there's mm-hmm. component, you know, it's a wide variety of mix, you know, seeds in the mix that, you know, are going to, you know, become mature and become palatable at various times.
Mm-hmm.
Or do you want something that's more like Last Stand, where it's going to be there, you know, more as your late season, you know, cold weather, winter type, you know,
and that's something you plant late summer, and but it's the tracting properties in it works late season
for, you know, for, well, for Last Stand,
for
yeah.
Last Stand, yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah,
you know, speaking to the fall annuals,
that and, was a fast mix, Joe. I'm scared of this, and it's very full. Thank you, Joe. Sorry, Daryl.
No. And as far as, you know, if you wanted the ultimate goal would be if you have the luxury of planning and, you know, whatever you want is, I want food 365 days a year.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to have a mix of perennials and annuals. I'm going to have, you know, I'm probably going to have, you know, things, you know, and to clarify that, you've probably got three different categories here, if you will. You're going to have year-round plots, which are going to sum up your perennials.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have spring/summer annuals, which are going to be, you know, your peas and bean mixes and stuff like that, or it could even be your you know, soil builder type plot, but it's still going to have food that the deer
soil can. Builder.
Just some things that you're going to be planting that are going to build the soil. It could be something as simple as buckwheat.
Okay.
That's going to build the soil.
Buckwheat's awesome.
So if you come.
Yeah, I've talked to Joe about buckwheat a lot.
You know, say if you get a new farm and you're taking ground out, you know, this, you know, you're putting it in ground into food plots and you're saying, you know, well, you know, my ground's not very good. It's just coming out of a hay field, or it's coming out of just grown up, you know, if it's CRP or whatever it could be, you know, and your soil's probably not going to be optimal. So just kind of helping flush it and put some nutrients back into it. And then, you know, all the while, you know, you're getting your soil, you spend the spring and summer essentially getting your soil ready to plant in the fall.
For the fall.
You know, to get rolling for the future.
In my head, and I'm only speaking from my perspective and some of my experiences, we've done, now knowing the details that I know about soil tests, I look at my past food plot experience as being very, how could I say it? Half-ass.
Oh, yeah.
And I've had buck brunch and Last Stand. We always did like half and half plots. One plot we do buck brunch. One we did both, half and half,
mm-hmm.
Just to see. And they've done great for me. And I've been lucky.
Well, that's just a testament to that product.
Testament to the product.
They're so hardy. They grow almost anywhere. It's insane how well those products grow.
And that's probably just the evolution of your guys' research and knowledge and testing and all of that.
It's got to be the rye that's in there. Yeah, I said it. It's coming.
So,
dude, when somebody asked me about a plot, like if I was going to do one plot, what do you recommend? Buck brunch. Like,
oh yeah,
that shit looks amazing. It brings deer in, and it's literally tonnage there from August or even earlier, depending on when you plant it. But I see deer in that. I mean, it's lush and green from August until March. That stuff holds deer.
I almost am a little reluctant to say, because that's what I planted mostly from Big Time, is, and it's worked so good that I just go back to it, and mm-hmm. it's just available about any box store that carries Big Time. They have Buck Brunch. But I'm reluctant to say, like, it grew so good, and I put minimal effort into it. But I'd hate for the next guy, his soil's way out of whack, and then he plant and not have the same result, which is a possibility.
Right.
You know, especially with all the details we cover with the soil test. Now, you know, it's getting better and better all the time, and it makes that process easier for the average guy.
And don't forget about Mother Nature.
Right. Like, there's a lot of variables in there that can really help or screw a lot right. up, you know, like drought being number one, or, you, I mean, name it, you know, anything yep. can affect it. My interest, speaking from me, I'm more interested in, because there's so much crop in the Midwest in general, I'm more interested in fall plots only. Okay. Not saying that I won't do spring plots too or whatever. Like, yeah, I will dabble in that. But right now, with how busy and chaotic my life is, fall plots is where I'm leaning. Like, right now in my head, I wanted to do spring plots. I had, my life is like literally got turned upside down this spring. Didn't have time to do everything. I bought a tractor, a little working man 1984 Yanmar deer tractor, trying to just get a little food plot unit, and I just wasn't able to do what I wanted to do. And you know most people that listen know about it all, but anyway, I'm trying to get a food plot ready for the fall before I go on my mule deer hunt, so I don't have to stress when I'm gone, and get that in before the 1st of September when I leave. So that's where my focus is, and I would assume most people's focus is keeping deer on their property during deer season. I know guys want to keep them year round, and that's important, but I would say generally, if we wanted to like shotgun blast a broad range, sure. it'd probably be more focused on the fall plots for the sake of limited time on a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys agree with that, or am I kind of just
100%?
I agree.
No, 100%.
Yeah. Well,
Go ahead.
I was just going to say diversity is everything. Like, if you have the opportunity to plant a lot of different food sources, it's not going to get better than planting four or five different ones. I mean, plan as much different things as you can. See what works for you. It's better to have annuals and perennials, just to have diversity on one farm.
And there's a reason why these, you know, you don't see straight one variety of clover. I mean, our clover's got five different varieties of clover in it.
Mm.
You know, everything's a mix, because the deer plants come and go, you know, in palatability and maturity rates and all that. Wow. So deer's going to be, they're browsers. They're going to be picking through. You know, one thing that has always amazed me and intrigues me is how a deer can literally walk through and, you know, say, well, that plant, I don't know what they're, you know, is it a smell thing that they can sense, or what that plant, you know, just like brassicas, they literally won't eat them, you know, generally speaking, until they get that good frost on them. And then all of a sudden, you know, how do they know? I mean, that's always intrigued me. And, you know, how do they go through a field of what we visualize as just a field of clover, and they're picking out, I mean, they're picking out what they're, you know, whatever's the most palatable at that moment, that's what they're going through.
Mm. I wonder if it's like a smell or a visual thing. I don't know.
Taste, smell, probably all of it, you know?
Yeah. And I don't know, but no, even, you know, the variety is key. I mean, you need a healthy mix, if it's possible, of perennials and annuals on your, you know, but even I was going to say to you about, you know, your specific situation of, hey, I've only got fall, you know, the best time to plant perennials is in the fall,
mm-hmm.
to get them established, because you're not going to benefit as much the first year, your first hunting season out of it, because that, you know, a perennial is going to put a lot of energy into root growth and establishment, because it's a marathon runner. Your annuals are sprinters. Mm-hmm. So that perennial is trying, you know, its natural life cycle is for the long haul. So it's going to spend mm-hmm. a lot of its initial, you know, which is why nurse crops, planting it, mixing it with oats or even brassicas or something like that is a good idea to kind of take some pressure off and allow it to get up and develop. But you also, you know, another benefit of planting a perennial in the fall is less weed competition.
Mm, okay.
You know, it's, you know, a lot of people, you know, frost seeding has become really, really popular, and it's a great technique. And, you know, guys are, you know, learning more about it and being really successful with it. But, you're still going into the dog days of summer, potentially. If we have an early, you know, a hot spring or a dry spring, or, you know, you're asking a really, really young, immature plant to survive that.
Mm-hmm.
And, versus you plant it in the fall, it's going to develop. It's got the optimal temperatures. You're not going to have the competition like you would with weeds.
The heat's not going to burn it off.
No, generally speaking, no. And then but then it's sitting there through the winter, still providing a food source. And it's going to, when you come out of spring, it's in the ground, into spring, it's in the ground. So whenever the right temp and the soil temps hit, it's ready to go.
Yep.
And it's going to jump, and then, you know, you come in there and things start greening up, and you give it a jolt of fertilizer and stuff like that.
It's just like your yard, your grass, you know, you can tell after when spring comes and it hits, yeah, or it just turns green, put a little fertilizer and it's nice and thick and lush.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, you've got a root structure now though that can better handle if you get into the hot, dry dog days of summer per se. So to your point, I wouldn't say, well, I'm just a fall guy. That means I'm only going to plant fall annuals, you know, and, you know, you say, well, I don't have that much time. If you start a perennial in the fall, I bet you could find time in the spring or in the summer to go out there and quickly spray, you know, or put some fertilizer on your food, on your perennial.
Mm-hmm.
And then now guess what? You've got a year long food plot.
Gotcha.
Well, that's the great thing about guys that are kind of stressed on time. Like for me, a lot of these hard to reach plots, I mean, I've got five of them that I don't like to get equipment back into. So I'll go back in there and plant my clover. So I go back in there and mow it once or twice a year. That's all the maintenance I have to do, you know, throw a little fertilizer on it and I'm good. So I look at my harder to reach places as perennial plots where I don't have to go back in there, work ground every year, seed it, and mess with everything. Once you get that established, it's good 5-6 years sometimes.
Mm-hmm. So that being said, I'm loving what you guys are saying. Like I'm actually learning a lot. Like this is really good. And I feel a lot of this, I just need to talk through a little bit. So what would be some of the blends, like, you know, maybe Shotgun Blast, several blends that Big Time offers that'd be good to plant in the fall that are good for that situation, that can get established and you can maintain with fairly minimal effort and still have very well established, you know, with a couple mows or a fertilizer blast or whatever it may be. Like what's some blends you would recommend?
Well, the only two perennials we offer right now are our Foundation Clover and our Clover Select.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so Foundation is going to be a straight clover mix. And then, Clover Select is going to be a clover and chicory mix.
And
so
those right are good now, for fall planting as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. So that's going to be your two that you're going to be looking at for, you know, trying to establish in the fall to carry, you know,
and maintain the deer eat clover even into the late season. And
absolutely.
All that.
Okay. I mean, you know, I think a lot of people have the misconception of clover as being a spring to fall type plot,
which it's great for.
It is absolutely great for, but
that's why you say clover's king.
Yeah.
Right.
And, well, I mean, it's good in protein, and I mean, it's just a good nutrient based plant. And I mean, you know, everything kind of eats on, you know, wildlife, meaning, you know, turkeys love clover. I mean, it is, you know, it's such a universal type plant, but, you know, you can snow cover. I mean, it's not like a grass where it's gonna shut down and go dormant and turn brown or something like that. It's, you know, clover's gonna be there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. they dig through that snow and get that.
Absolutely dig through it. You know,
I think people, and this is maybe just my perspective, I feel like in the conversation when you think late season, like in the winter when the snow hits, I feel like guys are just mainly talking about like soybeans is king when it gets cold.
Grains are great.
What's that?
Grains are great.
Grains, but
yeah,
then I think like
kind of a grain.
Turnips, like you know, some of the buck, what's in the buck brunch a little bit. But I always think like turnips,
Radishes,
stuff like that.
That's because that's what's been publicized.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. And that's what's preached, you know, that's what you see on your TV shows. But I think my point is all of those are good, and all of them, I mean, clearly have their place.
Right.
My point is don't have the misconception that clover is not good in the winter and it doesn't have an attractive ability factor when, you know, when winter gets harsh and all, because they will literally go dig through the snow for clover as much as they will a turnip.
Okay, well, that's good to know. I didn't know that.
I did this year. There's one plot where I could not get any equipment in the fall, so I went in before the crops were in, tilled up, put the clover in, so then I don't have to worry about it in the fall. Mm-hmm. And I can get the equipment in there and make it a little bit easier on myself.
So I honestly legitimately just learned a lot, because in my head I was thinking, and I kind of feel a little guilty for not knowing some of this information, but I'm glad that I'm learning it here, honestly, like while we're recording, because I can do some clover plots now on this piece that I want to do plots on. And I bought my little budget tractor and spent a little money on a new tiller, and I'm about to spend a little money on a little 48-inch brush cutter, you know, pull behind 3-point mower. Now everything that you guys have just said, I'm probably going to do some sort of clover blend through probably the foundation clover or something like that in the fall, and probably just try and keep it maintained, because you guys are right. Like I can get out a day and a few times a year and mow it, and then maybe hit it with some fertilizer or put whatever it needs on it a day or here or there. Now I don't have weeks to do it in the spring, but I can get out for a day for sure.
Yeah.
And do it. And I had never thought of it that way before. And I would assume that I'm not alone. For people listening, there's probably a lot of people going, oh shit, I didn't know that was a way it could be handled. So,
and something else that's awesome about, you know, about perennials, you know, clover or whatever kind of mix it is, you know, it's natural for it to have weeds in it, to have grasses in it. And some weeds, we were just having a conversation today about ragweed, you know, would I let it grow all up in my plots? No, but
I don't even know what ragweed is. I'll be honest.
It is. I mean, deer love it. And it is, I mean, they have done tests on it, and it'll draw as much protein as a soybean in a lot.
Doesn't look so pretty, but no. It's not
make you sneeze.
Yeah. And what's a ragweed? I mean, I'll know. If I see it, I would know. But, like, how would you explain it to someone? Hey, guys, sorry. We're interrupting the podcast again. We want to take a quick second and talk to you about...
Our bad.
The new Slick Trick broadhead, the Assailant. I know broadheads are a touchy subject on every internet forum and every bar conversation or hunting conversation. There's been many fist fights over
broadheads.
This one might catch a two blade. Keep talking like that.
And there goes that debate. The Assailant is a first in class hybrid style broadhead. So for everyone that's arguing, maybe this is where we all meet in the middle, guys. Maybe this is where we start to get along. 2 5/8 inch total cutting surface. It features the popular Viper Trick series field proven chisel style tip. And it has an inch and three quarter expandable head and a 7/8 fixed bleeder blade. So you kind of get the best of both worlds. You get the cut of a expandable, the reliability of a fixed blade. So
I just thought of a great commercial for them. It's like two guys, a mechanical and fixed guy in a bar about to fight. And the guy breaks up. He's like, well, I'm shooting both. And they're like, what? How? And he's like, throws a pack at him. Like, oh, and then they're all best friends.
And the one dude just leaves. Buys them both the beer, then leaves.
Yeah, and he's out. He's got like a big buck in his back of his truck already when he leaves.
Oh man! And then when he drives away, there's like white mist.
It's out the window. Just
flips him off.
I'm out.
By the way, there's a ton of broadheads from Slick Trick, but code WCB works on SlickTrick.net. So there's that. there's our plug. Podcast is also brought to you by Huntworth, HuntworthGear.com. I think Huntworth has been very well known for their gloves in the past.
Mm-hmm.
You can find their gloves about anywhere. Like Walmart carries them. A lot of farm implement stores carry them that have a hunting section. But I don't think people are familiar with yet on their like line of clothing, like their jackets, their hoodies, their light to heavyweight pant. They have a midweight pant. We put it to the test in Wyoming on our bear hunt. Absolutely loved it. I wore that hoodie the entire time. It has a built-in face mask in the
hoodie's
hood.
Cool. Yep,
and then it has two like pockets, like a regular hoodie pocket and then a zip pocket on the outside. Mm-hmm. I lived in that thing the entire
the entire week in bear camp.
I fell halfway down the mountain, didn't even rip a single article of clothing.
You didn't?
Nope, not one.
Last year, I wore a different brand of clothing out in Wyoming, and I was MFing it the whole time.
Were you?
It just wasn't like... It was built for only sitting in a tree.
Right.
And some products are. Like, some certain lines of clothing are. This stuff at Huntworth, I was stoked about the entire time. Like, it's nice when you get clothing that looks good and it's priced right and you're not MFing it the whole time.
And it fits well, too. And I like the, like, on your ass and on your knees is, like, a different material, so it's, like, tougher. So if you're sitting on the ground or, like, kneeling down,
yeah,
you don't have to worry about ripping your shit up.
And it's not, it doesn't, like, pull, you know, some, like, cheaper clothing, like, it fits weird or, like, pulls on you different. This doesn't do that.
Nope.
I was comfortable. And you kind of want to look good a little bit, you know,
hey,
you want to fit right.
The better you look, the better you hunt.
They
heard
it
here first.
Their one pattern, Tarnin, is kick-ass.
Yep.
I'm a huge, huge fan. You guys got to get on there and check it out. Right now they have 20% off all items and their summer sale code SMR20. So huntworthgear.com. Go there if you need a camo upgrade or go to their social and tell them that we sent you over and they'll be like, oh, cool. Who?
Sick.
We don't know those guys.
Who sent you over? Come again. The podcast, of course, has been brought to you by HHA for a long time. We're going to spotlight the new Tetra stabilizer. So you can get your sight, you can get your drop away rest, and now you can get a whole setup from stabilizers through HHA, which is kick ass. And also Thermoseat. And you're probably wondering, how the hell does Thermoseat come into play in the summer? Well, they have a lot of camping gear. They have the Thermabed for your dog. And right now they're free shipping on orders $50 or more, thermoseat.com. They have like the self-support seats for fishing.
Mm-hmm.
You're next to a pond or whatever it is. I'm probably going to use mine this weekend fishing for the 4th at the family's pond.
There you go.
They have the bucket seat, which is amazing.
That's a good one for fishing.
Little swivel bucket seat. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And if you just need a replacement tree stand seat, we carry them at workingclassbowhunter.com with our logo.
Love them.
Or fuck us and just buy a regular Thermoseat one on thermoseat.com.
Nah,
whatever you want to do. Code WCBTS will save you some money. But yeah. There it is. And they even have designated fishing cushions.
There it is.
I mean, look at that. How can you go wrong?
I don't think you can.
If catch a 10-pounder sitting on that bad boy, forget about it.
Forget about it.
Whew. You, buddy.
This is a cool partnership that we just collaborated with for the summer grilling months. If you're out of wild game or your wife doesn't like it or you just didn't kill a deer or whatever it is, Sumner Point Beef, they are a family-owned company that... You go online, sumnerpointbeef.com, and they have different like collection boxes that you can order real beef to your door. This hasn't been in a plant and butchered by a bunch of people. So if you're going to eat beef, this is the way you want to do it, especially a lot of outdoor people are all about eating organic. And if you're going to buy beef, this is the way to do it instead of buying it off the shelf at Walmart or a big chain grocery store. And they have a bunch of different boxes. You buy it, they ship it straight to your door. It comes in frozen, everything ready to rock. I mean, New York strip. You can pick whatever you want. They have
ground
beef box, ribeyes, beef patties pack, sampler box, family dinner box.
Got to go with the ribeyes.
The griller box. Awesome stuff. They're a local company to us, which is great that we get to help them out and work with them. And then they're even offering code WCB at sumnerpointbeef.com to save yourself some money. And that's Sumner, not Summer. I know I slur, but that if you need to go, link in our episode description, you can click through and get right to it. SumnerPointBeef.com. Get your wife a good steak, get her happy, get your boys some steaks, and then hopefully you kill an elk this fall, and then or whitetail or whatever you're hunting, and you can see
them. Or if you don't, just keep ordering more beef.
That's right.
I mean, it's hard to beat a good ribeye, man.
That's right.
I like my deer meat, and I like all my wild game, and I'll eat it any day. But you put a good ribeye in front of me, I'm going in.
Ooh, give me a good prime rib.
I'm making Play-Doh snakes.
Oh, dude, prime rib all day.
Oh, baby.
We hunted down some prime rib when we were in Jackson Hole.
We couldn't find any.
But ribeyes.
Couldn't find any?
We got ribeyes. They were good. No. They were good.
I'm going for prime rib this weekend.
Sumner Point Beef. Cook it out for the summer months and the holidays and lead you right into the fall. So we like to support local. They support us. We support them. So hopefully you'll give it a try and let us know. It's instead of the big, I guess, box subscription deals, you know, help somebody local and you know where it comes from.
Yeah.
That's right.
Don't wonder. All right. Back to the episode. Thanks, guys.
I don't know how you would explain it over a podcast other than
kind of stalky and gets tall.
It gets really woody the older, the more it matures over the summer. So it's coming up now, and I mean,
Google it.
Okay, Google it. Yeah,
but not to go down that rabbit trail. But it's just that, you know, obviously if you see it in a magazine, if you see it on a show, if you see it on our, you know, we don't have pictures on our bag per se, but you know, if you see that, then on our website. Well, we're going to put the best of the best pictures that we can get taken of it, you know, and so is anybody else.
Yeah.
But so don't feel like, oh God, I got a, you know, some grass coming up, or I've got, you know, one of the biggest reasons to get the weed and the grass out of it is just to take the competition away from the desired plant.
Yeah.
You know, how many ag fields do you go around the edges and there's clover all mixed in and it's just grass and those deer will walk those edges and browse.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think everybody wants that picture plot,
mm-hmm.
but don't feel like a failure because you don't have that. And just know that, I mean, you go out there in the grasses. I mean, with all the rain you guys have had, the weeds are popping faster than you can think.
Yeah.
And you can't get out to spray them.
You can't get out there in it. However, you know, you might go out there and be like, oh, man, I got a total loss. But a little bit of herbicide or a quick mow could turn that whole plot around overnight. Yep. I mean, and it will bounce back, I mean, quicker than you can imagine. So, mm-hmm. you know, I think that's something that's not really talked about a whole lot is it's done through picture talking, which doesn't paint the realistic picture.
Right.
Don't stress.
It's like
too
body
much.
Image.
Yeah. Don't stress too much about a few weeds is what you're saying.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. Right. And
every hot chick's got a few weeds, boys.
Yeah. So that's why they made filters.
Hey, Duck can understand that more than anybody.
Nah.
You're going to have that tramp stamp on most of them.
Hey,
what can you do?
Listen, the new tramp stamp's the under boob tat, but, but we're not hating.
We need a Instagram food plot filter now.
Yeah,
for sure. It makes your food plots
looks like gold.
It takes all the weeds out for you.
Yeah. Nice. Great. I love that.
Joe, work on that.
Joe.
I got it.
Get on that, Mr. TikTok.
Write that down.
I want to talk a little bit about like the makeup of the blend of the seed. Like how does, you know, everything that we've just said from the buildup into it, how do you guys figure out like, okay, you look at a bag of Big Time, you open it up, you look at your food plot blend, and it looks like complicated. There's chemistry going on in there somehow.
There's colors and different sized seeds.
The hell's going on here?
There's colors and rigmarole and all sorts of shit. You can see little Joe Humphrey heads in there, just like
a little Jack in the Box comes out.
Yeah,
because I'm mixing with love.
It just looks complicated if you don't know what you're looking at. There's a blend.
It is complicated.
How does that come together?
Quite frank,
that's his job.
Yeah.
that's what he does.
He just leaves it. That's what I do. And then moves on.
Drop the mic.
Top secret.
You know, it's trying to identify, you know, again, creating a strategy of what's our end goal with this particular product, and identifying the plants that you want to go into that and what purpose they're going to, each individual seed plant is going to provide for that mix. You know, when are the palatability range is going to be, you know, how many days is it going to be to, you know, to reach, you know, full growth slash palatability and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is this going to be a, you know, do we want this to be a full season type plot where it's going to have components to last from beginning to end and identifying those. And
that means like kind of what you touched on earlier, like the different blends of the plants reach maturity at different times. Mm-hmm. That's how the deer sift through. Yeah. So it gives the other.
Like in our foundation clover, when we've got an annual clover and we've got two actual annual clovers in there. And the point of those is, you know, you hear a lot. Oh, that's, you know, if you see a mix with annual clovers, that's, they're just trying to chip you off and, you know, they're trying
to filler in there.
Right. And no, that's actually serving a purpose to, you know, serve as a nurse crop, you know, while, you know, because they're, again, to that concept of marathon and sprinter here,
mm-hmm.
you know, you've got an annual that's going to try to jump out, make as much forage as it can, as quick as it can. So it gives something for that deer to browse on, some attractability to that plot while, you know, let's say in the foundation, while your Ladinos are developing and, you know, at the surface and a lot below the surface. And so, you know, there's a rhyme to, you know, and reason to all of it. But, you know, is it a food plot that you want for early bow season. Because a lot of guys come up and say, well, what can I have for bow season? Not a lot. I mean, unless you plant it in the spring and you've got some perennials, because you think about, you know, if you've got, like, I'm from North Carolina, I mean, we start the second week of September. I don't even plant until the last couple of weeks of September. If I've got enough rain, I've planted into October before. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, again, that's not lack of understanding, and it's not having the right kind of goal in mind. It's you know, you're more concerned about that small window than the full concept of the season. Mm-hmm. And I mean, but if that's your point, then I mean, if you plant it in August, you're not, how much growth are you really going to have by September, where the deer are really browsing in it?
I've had some tremendous success with the buck brunch doing that. Mm-hmm. You guys, Joe, you've told me don't plant that until August. And when you go in and you plant it mid-August and you get a rain on it, man, I've sent you pictures.
Instant.
Beautiful pictures of, I mean, it's over a foot tall by the time October 1 rolls around.
Yep.
So it's a very realistic goal. If you get Mother Nature to cooperate, you go in there and spread that in August, mid-August, you could be hunting over that the 1st of October if everything works out right.
So that's a good point. I mean, go by the date that's on the bag.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not getting off on a tangent, but it kind of goes in line. You know, plant.
They're on the bag for a reason.
They're on the bag for the reason. And but, I mean, well, I'm already seeing on the forums and everything, a guy had us tagged the other day with some lockdown, just planted in PA, just waiting on rain. Dude, you just planted winter peas in June.
I'm not knocking you,
but don't do that. I mean, you don't plant until later because I learned a lot from Daryl planting like turnips too early. If you plant too early, it's going to shoot, meaning it's going to seed. They don't eat it after that.
Right.
So
yeah.
That we're trying to give you the optimal planting time so they want to eat it.
Right.
When your season is in.
But you know, but also understand that those planting dates, I mean, they're recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
That's your optimal times, but obviously there's more that goes into that you've got to use your own brain as far as, you know, moisture and so on. Yeah.
Don't plant 2 months early.
Right. And that's what I was gonna say. To Joe's point, I mean, about, you know, you see a lot of people planting in, you know, May, June, even July in a lot of areas. Other than the, you know, on up north, they're planting that. And another down, and to me, probably one of the biggest issues with planting that early is by the time that it's that plant reaches maturity and it's time for the deer, you know, it's so fibrous, it's not going to be as palatable.
Right.
That plant trying, you know, and you got to learn a little about your area when your first hard frosts are and stuff like that, and you can kind of back up from that. And so you want to try to time that plant in there where it's hitting its stride and it peak palatability,
mm-hmm.
when you're going to be getting, you know, your first hard frost and, you know, right. and killing frost and so on. And, you know, and I see all the time that guys are wanting these, you know, volleyball sized turnips, and they pull them up and they're plastered all over the internet, and they got, you know, radishes is looks like your calf and so on. Well, that's awesome, but to me that tells me you planted it too early
and ain't gonna eat it,
and then you
but
really
like wood.
You really just want it. Well, they can't, I mean, they couldn't pull that radish out of the ground.
Yeah.
If they had to,
not as palatable as something that would have been planted at the right time.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so if that's that big, I know the leaves weren't as palatable, but then that deer's not going to pull that turnip out.
Yeah.
Whereas if he's got
the plant's going to rip off the top.
Well, he'll eat the top of it, and the rest of it will sit in the ground.
Right. Or he'll bite it because he can't pull it up and get it in his mouth, and the rest of it sits there and rots. Where if you had a baseball size, apple size, that's perfect. He can pop it out and roll it right around and eat it.
Yeah. I want to ask it's not really a question, but I have two things I want to bring up, I guess. I feel during this podcast, so I'm going to do – I have opportunity to plant a couple different small kill plots, if you will, this fall. I'm going to do one buck brunch, and now I'm going to do some in like foundation clover. And then I'm going to try to maintain those like after just hearing like legit, that's what I'm going to try and do. So that being said, I'm like really excited now. Like, and I'm trying to
I've been talking to my wife about it. Not that my wife like limits me, but I think out loud to try and set goals before, like, there's just so much to do, I feel like, in my life lately that I'm like, I need to get on this, start mowing stuff. So when I spray and go in, everything's under control. I can do my soil test kit. Now I'm not going to not do that and then get that ready. When it comes to like, I don't know if this like bulb food plot plants, like turnips or radishes, I always hear the rumor of like the deer need to find it to know what it is. If they don't find it, they won't eat it because they don't know what it is. Do you guys ever hear that? I feel like that's a thing I hear a lot.
Or it's like once they find it, they'll know it's there.
Once they find it, they know what it is. But if they don't have it in their area, they don't know what it is and they won't eat it.
I think probably the only thing that I could say to that is you hear some guy say, I planted this, you know, this crop of turnips and radishes mix or whatever, and they didn't even touch it. The field was beautiful. Well, and I think there's a couple of things that maybe they didn't need that food. They might not have needed that food source that year. You might have had a mild winter. There might have been something better over here. If you don't know everything, you don't know where they were feeding on.
If you had a super mild winter, they didn't get that sweet. True. You have to have a good cold spell to turn those starches into sugars,
yeah,
right?
And I mean, I can't tell you the number of times I've had folks come up to me and say, well, they didn't eat anything. You know, they didn't eat it. I said, well, did you go back in February or March? Yeah. What did it look like? It was gone. Well,
it didn't disappear.
Right.
They ate it.
They just didn't eat it when you wanted them to eat it.
Right.
But now I think more to the kind of to your question.
They may have found more sheds though.
Right. I think more so, to
not a bad thing.
I planted this plot for a shed spot.
Look, one of our field
testers. It's a field plot. It's a shed plot.
One of our field testers in North Carolina, I can tell you that he, you know, our weather doesn't get very good for in deer season. You know, brassica eating, if you will. And, but he plants it every year with that in mind, you know, that's going to be his shed hotspot food plot that he's going to go look. And he finds a bulk of his food, sheds in his,
I was just joking know. About that, but
I'm telling you, Blake does it.
They do it in North Carolina.
Blake does it every year. Yeah. I mean, and he has a lot of success doing it.
Blake he's one of our testers.
Yeah. Blake does phenomenal. He does a good job.
If you came out with a shed blend, you'd sell that like hotcakes.
You know, honestly.
Ooh, think about that.
Shed blend.
I'm just saying. Eric's saying. Doug's saying. Dana Pace would buy it. Dana Pace is our resident WCB
shed. He would buy 4,000 acres of that shit.
The guy, I think, likes shed honey more than he likes honey.
He does. Oh, he said it.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, and I think, you know, to that comment right there, I think that a guy that gets into food plotting and has some success with it, I think he will end up enjoying that, just to your point about the shed hunting, as much as his hunt.
Yeah.
100%.
Hunting. It makes sense. It becomes a whole other game.
Sucks you in.
You become more rounded in your.
Well, the beauty of it is, and this is one thing I'm the type of person that I like to see something that I just did. I like to be able to step away and be like, man, a finished product and stuff. And I mean, a food plot can be very humbling, but it can be very rewarding.
Very rewarding.
And, you just think about if a guy plants a food plot and then he kills a deer out of it. First of all, if he plants a food plot and it gets it to grow,
he's excited
about that. But then if he kills a deer, that's the icing on the cake.
That's the best thing too. When you actually turn up the ground, you put that seed down and you wait a couple months and you're thinking about it. I wonder if that's growing or not. And you walk in and it looks freaking awesome. That's so rewarding.
Hey, you know what? I found a hack. You put a spy point over your plot.
That's right. You can check on it every day.
I think.
Oh, touche.
Shout out to
kinda
spy point.
To correlate, that food plot, getting excited about it and watching them grow. You know, we've all listened to Clint get so excited on the podcast about finally figuring out that equation, that pattern for that buck thereafter.
Yeah.
I think that can go towards the food plot too. Like, I planted for this time, that buck just came out of this plot. It's the same deal.
Well, if you read if you saw our 2021 catalog, there's a story literally in there where a guy planted a food plot specifically to kill a deer.
It's probably the Clint story.
It was the Clint story. Yeah.
Okay. Yep. So forgive me for not remembering his name, but
Very forgettable.
But
I'm just kidding.
He's very quiet.
But there you
go.
Shy guy.
But to your original question, I think also to tie into that is, you know, if you go out there and you plant a food source that that deer's never encountered, I think it's very, you know, legitimate to say that he might not, you know, he, she, whatever, the deer might not take to it, you know, right out of the gate, you know, but, you know, we don't take to every, you know, new food that's put it's in like front of us.
Ordering a new dish from the Chinese takeout place.
And, right. You know, so, and I believe in that. I mean, you know, if
I haven't been to Popeyes yet, and that's new here.
Just saying. If they've never seen it, you know, again, I mean, you know, who knows how a deer recognizes they're not going around licking plants. I mean, how do they recognize that it's good and ready and this and that? But, yeah.
Sounds like my college days.
But I think the biggest part of that is what we've already said is that, you know, it may have been a other food source that they didn't really need that particularly, or you had a mild winter and they didn't go,
right.
You know, cause most guys, when deer season's over, it's on to the next thing. Right. It might take it might be finishing out waterfowl season. It might be waiting until shed season.
Yeah.
It might be waiting until turkey season. They might not ever see their farm again until turkey season.
Right.
So,
right.
And then they come back and they're like, all they remembered is what they saw during deer season and nothing ate it. But like we said, if they come back and it's gone, they're like, they don't think about it then.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Cause they
think it just rotted in the ground that fast.
Right.
Something like that.
Tornado almost came through here.
Turned to dirt. Is it fair to say, like, you know, maybe it's like a new food source to them, but that's like why there's a blend of seed, because maybe they're browsing something else and give it a try because it's a blend. Like, is that I'm sure that's a thing, right? I mean, there's probably no final word on it.
Well, it surely could be looked at like that. I mean, if you've got a seed that, you know, if you put turnips out there and they've seen turnips and you got radishes in there, I mean, it's there, you know, they're feeding in that food source. I mean, you know, even doing the strategy of planting a perennial like clover and mixing in turnips or, you know, something like that, you know, that first fall. I mean, I think, I mean, it's not out of the way to look at it that way for sure.
Something I want to ask. Okay. So we're talking about the seed, the blends, how it gets put together. And honestly, I don't know how else to ask this, but like, where the fuck do you get the seed? Like, how the fuck does it end up in the bag? Like, I know you're not like hand making seeds.
We are very fortunate to be partnered with a seed grower out west, and we work directly with them, and they grow a lot of their own seeds, and we are very the partner we got with. We were very lucky, and
to the point now where they're calling us asking us, what should we plant this field in for your blends? Like they're planting fields now.
Yeah, they've taken it upon themselves, which is great. And I think that they've seen the commitment to the food plot category that we've made and how well it's, you know, it seems to be taken off, that they're already designating fields out there to grow particular crops, you know, for our food plots. And, you know, and they have some of their own proprietary developed, you know, it's a big word, it's proprietary and this and that. But they, you know, they have some of their own proprietary seeds that they developed or you know, now you know, bought the rights to it or what, you know, that kind of stuff. And we benefit from that, you know, and you benefit from those things and versus, you know, nothing wrong with going to a, you know, like a seed distributor and buying them, you know, but, you know, another benefit that I, you know, that we get is we're able to get, you know, work with them and get, you know, good, you know, better pricing to where we were able to keep our, you know, keep our prices down and still offer a very quality product. And offer our, you know, work with our accounts, offer them the, you know, the chance to make the money that they require, but also keep the retail, you know, down to where, you know, it's affordable and, you know, working with them and knowing that we're putting some quality seed in there. I mean, and,
people take for granted, like everything that goes into it. I think like, so much that,
I mean, and you know, how we come up with it. I mean, it goes all the way down to the percentages of seed seeds in the bag. You know, and even trying to hit your marks on, you know, well, we need a half acre, we need it to be at this weight and blah, blah, blah. I mean, I spend hours
counting
on
seeds.
On the phone with our seed grower, figuring out these percentages and figuring out these mixes, and you know, luckily he's very patient with me, and I'm patient with him too.
That's a good point to bring up, and I'm gonna defend you, your honor, for a minute. So, like, the hours and hours and days that you spend working on percentages. So when a guy just grabs a couple bags and throws them together, those percentages have been worked out for a very long time. So you metaphorically just mushroom stamp Daryl Cherry in the face by mixing those. You just ruined the whole blend.
Not so good.
Don't mushroom stamp Daryl.
Don't mushroom stamp
Daryl. Don't do that.
They're blended pissed. Already.
There are don't a lot blend of people anymore. That would appreciate that.
You sick. You're not doing freaks.
But I mean, going back to that, it's on the bag for a reason.
Yeah.
Like, don't just throw it all together. Like, if you want to have a couple different blends out there, cool. Divide your plot. Like you like were talking, saying, Kurt.
Yeah, divide.
You know, have Buck Brunch over here and Last Stand over here. Don't just throw
they're
them.
They're blended
in
on purpose. You guys already blend them.
Right. We do that for a reason.
It's done by plant population and you know, a rate per acre when it's broken down. So, I mean, you know, because so that these plants have the space that they need to grow and, mm-hmm. I mean, That's all figured out. It's not, you know,
it's not a guess.
No, it's not a guess, and it's not us saying, well, you know, let's keep this one.
Fuck it, throw that in there.
You know, and to that point, good. Another thing that, and I may be going off track here to the question, but speaking to what you're going to see on the seed tag, which is going to show your percentages and what's in the mix and all that kind of stuff. Joe brought it up at the very beginning about how many seeds are in a, you know, a pound of clover, how many seeds are in a pound of radishes and, you know, and so on. And people cannot fathom how many seeds are in a pound of different types of varieties. I think clover,
especially clover.
Yeah. Ladino clover has like 768,000 seeds in a pound.
What?
They're tiny.
So that being said, when, you know, we hear it all the time and, you know, you want to get upset because, you know, people are accusing you of cheating them or, you know, or competitors now. It's a big thing that, you know, you get your, let's call them, the garage guy that's going to, you know, small guy that's going to open up and say, I'm going to sell seed.
Hey, well, listen, by the way, you can let out your frustrations on this podcast.
But, you know, it's just that.
No?
Okay. I don't
appreciate it. Sorry.
It's just one of those things. They don't have the. they might not be, you know, their way of marketing in that is to get on social media and trash somebody like us or even some of our competitors, you know, right.
If your marketing base is to trash everybody else, just say you're the best. You probably got something wrong with your blood.
You're making up for something.
Yeah. And you're right. And you're accusing this guy over here of, oh, they're ripping you off because this, maybe by you saying that you might be hiding. What are you hiding? You know? And
diverting.
Right. But, so if you see, you know, 10%, clover on a, you know, I'm just throwing the number there on that. You know, I think a lot of people look at the percentages on those bags and they just think the percentages they know are from math class. Well, 10% is lower than 70%, so I don't have any of that in there. But, you know, when there's 100-some thousand, I might be off my number.
No one's going to know.
But there's 768,000 Ladinos, your percentage is going to be smaller.
Right.
But you're going to have a lot more seed in that bag of that particular variety.
Mm. I think one of the lessons I learned from you early on when we were doing some of our first blends that I never took into consideration was when we were talking about, okay, we're going to have this seed, this seed, these, we're going to have clover in there, we're going to have turnips in there. But then you're taking into consideration when a turnip matures, how much space it takes compared to that clover. And that's also going in to factoring how much of each is going to be in that bag too.
Yeah, the ratio has to be right.
Because you want it perfect and not choking each other out. It's supposed to be compatible with everything.
Mm-hmm. God, there's a lot into this, ain't there? God, it's so interesting. Like, I'm and this is food plot nerd stuff. I'm really enjoying this.
I mean, lockdown, per se. I mean, I know I'm giving you kudos and kissing your ass, but you've got a review coming up, so consider this your review.
That's me. But like,
yeah. You got to keep your job.
But like having a spring pea in there because they're going to eat that spring pea to allow the winter pea to mature.
Right.
Like there's so much.
There's a science to it. It's not just you're throwing a bunch of random shit in a bag.
No, that's my job.
Right.
Yeah, there's definitely, if you want to label it as science or just putting the hours in and, you know, and gritting it out. I mean, whatever you want to call it. I mean, it's, yeah,
somebody already took that phrase seeds of science. We can't use that.
Science of seed.
But yeah, there's a lot of effort that goes into it. So,
hey, working class, throwing shit in a bag.
Just do what you're told. We told you so.
Yeah, listen, we put it here for a reason. Less math for you. Let's talk about, you know, the seeds in there, the blends, like the amount of seeds, all that. A lot of guys will see like coating in there or whatever it may be. What's up with all that?
All right. So, you know, that's another popular smear these days, if you will, that, you know, it gets under your skin because nobody's trying to rip you off. We're not. I mean, let me just speak to us. We're not trying to rip you off, but you know, these guys will say, well, coating, and they're, you know, you're getting less seeds per pound because it's coated. And
is it because the coating adds weight?
The coating does add weight to the bag, but it takes away from your percentage of seed, if you will. Mm-hmm. However, on legumes, let's say clover, the coating is pretty critical to carry, you know, your bacteria that you need, your inoculant, the bacteria that you need, because a clover, you know, legumes create their own nitrogen, but they need that bacteria to, you know, activate in the soil and to create that process. So you need it as the carrier in that. But we coat our brassicas. A lot of people say, oh, why would you need that? You don't have an inoculant on. But there's other reasons to that too. Meaning that, it is simple as flowing through a seeder, flowing through a drill. It's going to be denser. So it's going to flow. And, we add colors to the coating, and you can visibly see it if you're broadcasting it and so on.
That's a main reason why the color is there. I'm missing that, but
that's the main reason we put the colors on there. Right. You know,
we got to keep track of them when we count it.
It's visibility.
you don't number.
You count every bag, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, another thing, the people that are saying this about coating, that it costs money to do that.
Oh yeah,
you wouldn't just do it.
We're not doing it just to do it. It is not a cheap process. So
okay, you know, I'm not going to get into any details. If you listen to our library podcast, we've had other food plot companies, basically, and I'm not quoting exactly, say that like coding was like a ripoff, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Like, but your point right there, that's a great point. You're not spending extra money just for the fucking hell of it.
No,
right? You know,
but I think one of the probably other than your, you know, carrying an inoculant or something like that, but something else that, and there's a lot of things that can be added into that coating if you're, you know, planting alfalfas and stuff like that, that need to be added in there. But, you know, a raw seed, a coating is going to encompass that seed. So it's going to take enough moisture to break down that coating to get to the seed to create germination.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's like oil dry.
I guess
it sucks up moisture.
Yeah. So the
that's a very working class.
It's like oil dry. It sucks up moisture. Thing.
I like where your head's at,
Eric. Give me nuts on that, because there's only
hey. That, I mean, that's what
dude,
that's
he
what
literally
does.
Lit up over here because he could just go with it.
Hey, you
oil
it.
Dry.
It's like oil dry.
That's for Eric.
But
take these buttons away from me.
The way to look at that is that you're, you know, if you've got enough moisture there to wash that seed coating, you've got a more optimal environment around that seed as far as moisture.
Yeah.
To have enough for it to germinate and grow. And yeah. and it's going to, in that clay, you know, the coating is going to hold moisture there. Whereas, you know, you're still going to need some follow up moisture. Whereas, right. You know, if you've got seed out there and you say if you had some moisture in the soil or, you know, even in the fall, you're going to get heavier dews and stuff like that. It doesn't take a ton of moisture to start the germination process. But then if you start that process, there's no turning back. So if you start that process and then you go dry and, you know, the seed dehydrates and, you know, you've already started that cellular process of breaking, it's over.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, you know, another benefit of the seed coating, and I mean, there's studies. I mean, Cornell's got a really good study. Kentucky's has done a good study. I think Auburn. The information is out there that why, I mean, these research around university studies that are showing you the benefit of seed coating. And, yeah. And I mean, it lists, it's not just us making it up and saying, because we think so.
It's not to just please the eye for no reason.
Right.
As long as it's the right percentage. I mean, there is that happy median of,
well,
if it's 70% coating.
Yeah, I mean, you look at these studies, and every one of them that I've ever seen, they're going to cite 34% coating, which is where most of your seed guys are going to tell you that it's the right coating. Can you do less? You can. Can you do more? You can. You know, and I've seen people on their clover say, well, you know, 34 is too much. And you look at theirs, and it's like 6 or 10% coating. You know, well, it could flake off. I mean, you know, these things get beat around, you know, think about that, either raw or that light of a coating, you know, that is, if it's going through a drill, if it's going through a broadcast spinner, mm-hmm. you know, it's less protection for that seed. That seed could get damaged. I'm not saying that's a really, really common problem.
You know, like the coating durability to like make sure by the time it hits the ground, it's another
protectant.
Efficient.
I mean, it's a protectant somewhat for
it's really
the seed.
Insurance.
So that, you know,
ooh, that's a good mm-hmm. way to put that.
So I mean, and you know, another thing. I mean, all these studies cite is you put out. Yes, you're going to be putting out less seed,
mm-hmm.
but the plant survivability is higher with coated seed.
It makes up for it.
So, I mean, it would beg the question, do you want to put out more seed or do you want to have more plants?
Wow, that's fucking right. I like that, man.
I mean, you know.
I'm writing that down.
It's a good way to put it.
A good point to exactly what you just said. There's a company out there that just completely bashes coating every day, all day, nonstop. That's all he does. To our foundation clover, we'll take that. It's a 34% coating. It takes 4 pounds to cover a half acre. His blend takes 10 pounds to cover the same coverage.
Whoa.
A half acre. How can you have the argument?
There's no argument. There is no
right,
argument.
Do the math on it. I mean, you're having to plant more seeds for the equal amount of germination.
More than double.
More than double.
Quality over quantity.
Can you repeat the numbers on that again?
4 versus 10.
Four to 10, yeah.
Wow.
4 pounds. And I'm not, you know, I don't name names.
Yeah, we're not here to do that.
But how right can now. You say.
But if you want to.
You're
but
getting you cheated for having a coated seed. Ours isn't coated, but you have to plant 10 pounds.
You're saving more money and you're getting more out of it.
Yeah. Okay. And one of our guys went round and round until he eventually got kicked off the forum with him because basically we called him out and. Hey. You know, like, hey, here's the Cornell University study. Cornell's way too classy for me to even, you know, spell. But
once you hear it, you're like, oh, yeah. Shit.
Yeah.
But I do think the biggest thing to me is what that last statement of, what do you want, plants or more seed?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think it's, you know, I think that people are listening, that are listening to the folks that are saying, oh, well, you're getting ripped off. You're getting ripped off. Well, the people that are putting 34% coating, and it's not just us, we're not over here saying, you know, spending all of our energy and time saying, well, you know, you're getting ripped off by them because of this.
That's because we're too busy selling.
You're focused on what you're doing.
And, I mean, but why getting that
right.
back and that forth anyway? Match. But, you know, we have confidence in what we're doing. We know that we're doing it the right way. We're not trying to rip somebody off. And,
yeah.
And, you know, but I think people should, So to take a hard look at that. And if, you know, if somebody's trying to call out other people, what are they, you know, why?
Yeah, what are you calling out?
Yeah, you know, where's the integrity in that? And I mean, look, right. I mean, competition's healthy.
Yeah.
But
it is good.
But slander's not.
Right.
You know,
right.
And you know, so I would just encourage people to, you know, make some choices and, you know, do a little bit of research. Just because a guy says it, you know, we were just talking about somebody in the industry a while ago, and we according to the internet, he was 155 years old.
He died in 1994,
but he's still alive.
I'm alive.
Guy just keeps going.
That's pre-podcast conversations we had at the in the green room bar.
But
I didn't know what the fuck you're talking about until you got into it. That's so funny.
But not to go too far down that road. It's just that, you know, the main thing is that we call out the benefits of the coding, and it is backed up,
right.
Not by just our word, it's backed up by university studies. So
right.
If you want to go out there, do a quick Google search of benefits of seed coating, and it's there.
It's not just a claim.
No.
Talking to you from what we talked about today is like, you're not going to waste your time to put out a shitty product just to try and screw people. You know what I mean?
I'm not going
to
waste my money either putting on coatings, and because like
that,
I said,
that has
they're not cheap.
Right.
Yeah. Right now, just hearing you talk about how like into all this you are, what are some blends that like you're really excited about right now and why?
That would be our test blend.
Okay. Well, we can't talk. talk about that.
No, but in line, I would say, you know,
that's the shed blend.
On the market blends.
Like, I would say Foundation and Lockdown have been, the biggest successes. I mean, Buck Brunch is a very good solid SKU for us, you know, but it's been around and it's,
that was the original.
It's got a market name already. So, I mean, that wasn't, you know, we did some tweaks, to it.
It's so big cause we've, you know, we really love it.
Right.
Yeah. We noticed the tweaks over the years too.
So yeah, like we've been feeling it cause we're really the name behind that blend. You know what I mean?
Jesus.
Where's the wah-wah-wah button?
There it is.
Oh, wow.
Twice. There it is. Thanks, Joe. Thanks for that.
But, you know, another mix that really hasn't gotten, you know, and we had some issues, with supply issues, but not the fault. It was our own fault last year for long range. But if you'd asked me that question last year, like, what are your favorite two mixes? I would have said Foundation and Long Range.
Mm-hmm.
And it changes.
But the Lockdown has just been it has been a very good seed mix that people are having a lot of good luck with.
It was kind of the sleep when we came out. And I mean, to the same question, I think if we were going to rate what we were going to have as the top and everything, I mean, we knew Foundation was going to be hot. I mean, we had tested everything. We knew what we were putting on the market. We're not going to put a bad product out.
Mm-hmm.
We knew Foundation was going to be solid. And it is. Money. Lockdown would not have been my number two, to your point. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it hit the market last year and exploded.
Just took off running.
Yeah. And, mm-hmm. and that's the, you know, another piece of this puzzle that we're talking about. We have to guess what's going to be best.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Meaning we can't just be like, oh, we're getting low on this. Let's make some more. Like,
right.
We have to have our seeds for the
planning for the year. There's money to be spent before you sell it.
Right. But, yeah, I mean,
you got to get numbers in early.
Because they're planting.
You're thinking, I mean, these are crops.
They're asking us what to plant.
It's just like corn.
And then we have to pray that this drought ends where they're planting our seeds for next year.
Yeah.
Right.
So, I mean, what was it, 2 weeks ago? We're literally doing our estimates for next year. Because they're like, all right, we got to start planning.
And they got to get seed in the ground probably.
Yeah.
What a complicated market.
Well, seed's in the ground now.
Yeah.
Right. That's
what you're looking at, though. And I mean, and that, it's a moving bar some in the fact that, you know, with out west where they grow a lot of these types of seeds in the upper west, northwest, they're having just unprecedented weather right now. It's just super hot and dry. And
right.
New records every day. 115 degrees yesterday, I think
it's been like that for like two or three weeks. And I mean, it's, you know, and there's going to be, seems like we're in a vicious cycle of shortages these days, but you know, there's going to be certain seeds that, you know, it's not just going to be our seeds. It's going to be across the board on the market that there's going to be seeds that, I mean, you know, you better be first in line and lock up your, what you want. Mm-hmm. And because the price, you know, supply and demand, I mean, the harvests aren't going to be good. And they're already predicting that. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's dealing with all that. And, I mean, I don't like throwing to the vlog. I don't like throwing poop on the wall, I guess is what it said.
You can say shit.
Shit on the wall.
On the wall.
He won't do it.
Sticks.
He won't do it.
But he called the shit poop.
Allison called it that. I would have at least said crap on the wall.
You want me to write a blog?
You know,
I'll say shit on a blog.
I don't like guessing. Yeah. You know, we want it to be as, I mean, obviously from a financial standpoint, we have to do the best we can for our company. But, you know, we want to try to hit that mark where we can have the seed and we can, you know, worst thing we wanted to have last year, we sold out of lockdown and long range. That was a great problem in the fact that people took to it, but we missed a lot of sales because we went a different direction, you know, and we should have gone this direction and
right.
We bobbed when we should have weaved, I guess. But,
I think the word got out on long range on what it was and the blend itself. And, you know, we do a lot of work with outfitters and they gobbled it up.
Yeah.
I mean, and when your outfitters are hitting you that hard on it that fast, that tells you a lot. This is their business. This is their livelihood to get people on deer and kill them. So when they look at that, be like, that's what I want. I mean, that's, we knew we had a good one.
Yep.
And like you said, you know, we sold out quick and then lockdown was the next in line. I mean, just two solid blends.
Hey, something while I'm thinking of it, we mentioned this in a little bit of detail when it comes to entry and exit and access and planning for your plots. And Chandler, you brought up like borderline and, you know, you can take a flat spot and make it more accessible. I don't want to skim past like what is actually in the borderline blend. I feel like that's important. Like what are the, does it also double as a feed? Is it only a cover crop for entry and exit? Like is there any benefit besides entry and exit to the blend?
There are feed components to it. You know, I mean, just like when the sorghums that are in it, when they head out, I mean, there's a food source there. You know, the sun hemp that's in it. Yes, that can be, you know, that's a food source also. But, the goal is to get in height out of it. It's not necessarily a food source. And by the, you know,
it's one thing if they nip at it, you don't want them browsing on it.
We don't want them to browse it down. And
cause it ruins the point of it. Right. Right.
Yeah. I mean,
if they nip on the sun hemp, it actually bushes out a lot more. I'd noticed that at the test.
Yeah. I mean, if you're planting sun hemp straight, you know, for hemp. Yeah. For a crop per se, I mean, if you wanted to be a food source, the best thing to do is go out there and keep it mowed down, you know, 2 or 3 feet tall, and they would just eat. I mean,
just mow it down.
Yeah, they won't really. It's an aggressive enough plant that they don't really mow it down too bad. But they, you know, they'll keep the tops eaten out of it, which, I mean, that's no different. I mean, they're eating the tops out of the beans, and I mean, you know, that's the benefit of mowing your clovers to keep the, you know, now, the tender growth and so
it's
on.
Borderline. It is, I'm assuming to get the height out of it, it's something you'd want to plant more in the spring.
Yes. You know, pretty critical when your soil temp, not your air temp, which is very different, but very important. When your soil temp's around 60 degrees, you want to get that in the ground. And
what was that off the wall equation that you gave me to determine your, a rough estimate of your soil temp.
It's when you can get an average of your daytime and nighttime temps around 140. So you're looking at about an 80 degree versus 60 degree night or something in that ballpark. Mm-hmm. Usually, you know, rule of thumb, if you don't have a soil temp probe or something, you know, you're probably in a safe zone.
Or
but I mean, you know, if you're
or
looking
if they're planting corn,
if they're planting,
yeah, if you see guys planting corn, your soil temp's getting up there close to where you want to be.
That's right. That's exactly what I was going to say. Which is probably the easiest. I mean, there's always going to be some corn.
I'll be the one thing that I'm the most bummed about that I didn't get. Like as far as my food plots are concerned, I didn't get my border line in like I wanted. Like I had big plans for it, and I feel. I mean, it might be a month before I get the implements I want from my little Yanmar John Deere to get some of that in. And it, so say I get it in late July, borderline. Is it too late? Like, am I going to waste my time?
I'm going to price it, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if it was 1st of June, mid-June, I'd probably say you'd be okay.
Mm-hmm.
But end of July is getting pretty late in there.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, to get the height that. I mean, you know, and
that's what says. I talked to Joe about it. I'm like,
if you want a 1 foot wall, yes,
I can crawl,
but
yeah, belly crawl.
Yeah. I'm pretty good at crawling.
But, you know, something too that's. I mean, and it's on the bag as a recommendation is when you get your borderline coming up. When it's, you know, four or six inches tall or so, you know, which Joe just did the other day, you know.
I had a hard time with that, too.
You go out there and hit it with some nitrogen, 3400 or something like that, you know, 25 pounds to a half acre or something. You don't have to load it on there, but it gives it a good, nice jolt.
Mm-hmm.
He had to give me a pep talk because I've got this thing where if I plant a plot, I don't want to step in it because I might break a plant.
Right.
And
but I get that.
Though. I'm going to go out there and I've got my shoulder spreader and I'm going to go out and spread.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, dude, I feel horrible. I'm knocking some plants down.
Joe's got stilettos.
You
got to
look at it like a farmer, Joe.
You'll be fine.
Yeah.
You got to look at it.
I know what you're going to
say. The greater good, man.
I know.
You got to look at the greater
good. That's
what
Daryl's like, Joe. I can't do a good Daryl. I can do a Philip Vanderpool. I can't do Daryl. Joe. The benefit that you're giving these plants is going to be better than you stepping on one sun hemp. It's okay. Just go.
But I get what you're saying because you
it just makes me feel bad.
You think you shouldn't be in it.
Yeah.
Right.
You know? It's like the forbidden fruit. Like, I don't want to knock stuff over that I'm growing. And
yeah. By the way, I don't know if you can smoke sun hemp, so you can step on it.
You can't.
You can't.
It's just horrible.
I kept telling Kurt I was going to plant my whole front yard in a borderline so my neighbors couldn't see what I'm doing.
Funny story about sun hemp, though.
For some reason, when Eric told me that, like, I laughed too hard at it.
Yeah, you thought it was the most funniest thing ever.
It was, like, the best thing in my life at the moment.
When we first decided we were going to use sun hemp, I planted some behind my house because, as we've talked before, my neighbors are assholes and hunt the line.
Mm-hmm.
And so I planted a bunch of
your
it
old
right
man?
On the line. Not my old man. No.
He's your neighbor.
He is my the other
that
neighbor.
That is true.
I planted a bunch of sun hemp, and I called my CO. I'm like, just so you know, this is what – because I didn't know what it looked like at the time. Daryl's just like, plant this. It's going to be great. And I was like, hey, I planted a bunch of sun hemp, so if you guys are flying the helicopter, it's not –
it's not the chronic.
Weed. It's just sun hemp. And he's like, okay, Joe, that's cool.
That's fine.
Whatever.
He's like, why are you calling me?
Yeah, it's literally in your ditch.
Yeah.
You know, another benefit to our own borderline, just to throw out
there.
He
just kept on going.
Yeah.
that's why I'm here.
The real MVP.
It's, you know, we did some tests on this last year, and it was actually planted next to a competitor's type of
borderline.
Concealed type.
Screening.
Yeah, you guys, that's what I'm looking for. But we planted it specifically as a bedding type cover area, not as a barrier. And, you know, the side by side was that they picked ours over the other. And I think that was just a compliment to the mix of seeds that are in there, the plant varieties that are in there, that it wasn't so rigid that they couldn't walk through there. And the millet that we've got in there is not a stalky millet, and so it gave them a good ground cover. I mean, cause
is a millet just like a type of grass, or
yeah, it would be in that family. Yeah, I mean,
like a sorghum family.
Yeah, sorghum family.
It's got kind of a head to it.
Corn's in the sorghum family, right? Looks. I mean, am I wrong on that?
I think they're actually considered in the grass family, but. they are what they are, I guess you'd say.
Whatever. am I looking too far into it? I was hoping you'd get
it.
Went too far.
Too far.
But, you know,
fuck me, right?
When we created that, I mean, if you were to plant borderline and have it come up successful and all, you would see that it was strategically where you've got plants that are going to get this tall, you know, it stages all the way up so that to make it thicker.
Right.
You know,
it's creating a screen.
Yeah. So you can't see because.
Yeah. You can still get through it.
Right.
It's all intertwined and.
Intertwined and infused.
But,
thanks for the Joe Dirt reference.
You know,
you're welcome.
Daryl just like rocks through all our dumb shit.
He did.
It just keeps going.
Like nothing.
I love it. Like, I mean, that's what we need, though. We need this type of guest that's just like, yeah, they're dumb.
Someone to keep us in check.
And so on. We're going back to the seed.
Just say it. Borderline is the mullet of big time.
Oh, damn.
Ooh.
Gee whiz.
Come on.
He's cringing.
Lush.
Maybe the bowl cut?
So what is, explain to me your emphasis on the mullet.
There's no business.
Joe, let me come into this.
How good is the mullet?
I'll disagree with your analogy there.
Okay.
I feel that a mullet is something that you don't give a shit about when you grow it. Whereas I feel borderline is very thought out and cared about when it comes to.
Oh, mullet is very thought out.
I disagree.
No, I don't think.
Maybe Buck Brun should be the mullet.
That's what I was going to say.
I care about all of them.
Mullet, where it's business in the front, party in the back, we're talking about foundation and Buck Brun.
Right. Okay. Hey, I'm more on board with Daryl on this because I feel a mullet. You know, if you're going to, like, what would you consider the mullet and ACD soundtrack to the Big Time Family? Because I'm not on board with either. I had a mullet back in the day, and I don't need to go back, you know? And nobody needs to really listen to ACDC.
You had one when you were three.
That's what I'm saying. Kentucky Waterfall, El Camino Headrest.
When you
Headrest,
have it as
up?
An older person, you actually take care of that.
Listen, take care of it.
If you grow up mullet and wear pit vipers, you don't get any pussy, and I said it. So what's up?
God dang.
Jesus.
You just pissed a lot of people
What's up? You got Hey Dudes on, too? Whoa, how'd I guess that?
God damn.
Nice.
I've got Hey Dudes.
How original. Am I right, Joe?
I like Hey Dudes.
Hey, listen.
They're
comfy. I just hurt everyone's feelings
on TikTok. Did we just exit out of the hunting? Yeah. Did we just exit out of the whole hunting industry?
Yeah, we went to a different realm.
Remember the people you're talking to, Kurt.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, I'm sorry. That's just
speaking of which, though, thank you for reminding me. I have an offer. I would like to sit down and actually interview you.
Okay.
Just me and you, one-on-one.
I'm in.
The lights will be dim.
Mano y mano.
Much more dim.
Hey, listen, everyone, listen. I'm just going through some things.
We're going
midlife
to
crisis.
Explore and evaluate your hatred of AC/DC.
It's the worst rock band of all time.
No, we'll get into that later. Mm. It'll be another podcast, me and you.
Okay.
I really want to do it.
We can do it tonight.
We have the equipment. We can do it right after this.
With warm old Milwaukee's.
80s Metallica was around. You chose to listen to AC/DC.
I listened to everything, man.
Your character. It's a good call.
I would be listening to AC/DC, Metallica, and Mark Chestnut all on the same burnt. Because not burnt. Listen, cassette. It was before CDs.
Sorry, like, Daryl, but I got to make a point real tape. Quick. We're back to Daryl.
This is what we do.
20 songs.
Mixtape.
One AC/DC song. Acceptable. More than one.
I would agree. No, I would agree with that.
We're on the same page, and we just didn't know it.
No, you made it sound like AC/DC is the worst ever. You're never
the
listening
same
to
seven songs get played on the air. I think that's where you're going with this.
Oh, they're terrible.
Let me ask you this, and then we'll get back to Daryl being serious.
Okay.
Daryl Rose back.
My whole family says
for
I'm always
3 hours,
serious.
You had to listen to one of two bands, 3 hours straight in this room by yourself. AC/DC or Chumbawamba?
I don't know Chumbawamba.
Yes,
no, that was the actual song. No, that was the band.
They only had one album. So,
well, there's only one song you'd listen to.
Well, one that everybody knows.
I get
knocked down. Yeah.
Oh, AC/DC.
Thank you. All right. He acknowledged it. All right, Daryl.
Back
to you. Back
to you.
That was one song.
It's just looking at us like, what just happened?
Tub Thumper.
Yeah, throw that in there. Sorry, Daryl.
Tub Thumper.
See, I was really interested in everything we were saying, then he got me on AC/DC.
I'm good now.
I'll play Thunderstruck with you, and that's about it. We'll meet there. Halfway point. Podcast doesn't need to happen now.
Shoot the thrill.
Big balls.
Terrible. Fucking terrible. Suck it up. Listen to better music.
Daryl just left.
Eric, can I get a beer?
He's walking to North Carolina.
Black Sabbath with the round, and people are listening to AC/DC.
I've got an Uber coming, yo.
What the fuck?
Come back.
Daryl, you like
AC/DC? Daryl, please come back.
He's in New Windsor.
Do not.
Thank you.
I actually do not. Not because we're talking about it. I do not like AC/DC.
I'll give you this. if I had to choose between Pantera or AC/DC, I'm going with Pantera.
Mm. That's my point. That's what I'm getting at.
But that doesn't mean that AC/DC sucks.
Right. They do suck.
But they don't.
Here's the thing.
He wore a skirt.
One AC/DC did?
Didn't he?
Wasn't it a kilt?
It was a kilt.
Well, hey, listen, fuck that guy. I mean, you know?
So did William Wallace. You're not going to call him a bitch.
Hey, I'll admit this, Joe. AC/DC.
Yeah, hold your tongue about William Wallace.
Every 20 songs, one AC/DC song. Generally a crowd pleaser, but not for me.
Okay.
It's not for me.
Skateboarding, bitch.
Hey, listen. Hey, say that for the late night podcast. Jeez.
80s Metallica, Pantera, Tool. I mean, Tool's a little later. Tool. But, I mean, you just
don't even get started on this. That's a whole nother podcast. It's a good one. I think we need to do that.
I agree.
All right, save it for, Daryl, back to you, man. I'm fired up now.
Daryl, we hate AC/DC.
Daryl,
I'm sorry to interrupt this intelligent conversation we've been having for 2 hours for Joe to interrupt for 6 minutes on
proceed.
Terrible 80s rock.
ZZ Top, end of discussion, continue.
Gang, gang. All right, I'm in. But, I mean,
really don't like them.
I hate them. What else is there to cover, man? I feel like we did. The soil test thing was great. I'm glad we broke that down. I really learned a lot there. But I feel like we covered a lot of very, and I don't want to say just like working class questions, but like generalized concerns when it comes to people who are mostly uneducated about like food plot specifics when it comes to blends, what to plant, when and why. Access is definitely like once you get all well, it's number one because that's where you decide where to put yourself. But I feel, as much as anything else, that is probably just as important as like the soil test and all the other logistics. Like it kind of goes hand in hand because if you did everything perfect but it was in the wrong spot, then you're kind of like, what the fuck? Why did I do this? And what's sad is I think a lot of people won't realize that they might have messed up on the specifics of location of their plot, and they tend to blame other things. Just because you walk in the dark and out in the dark doesn't mean the deer don't know you're going in there. And I feel like that's a huge thing. Like we did a podcast last summer about basically entry and exit and scouting with Mark Drury, and he breaks a lot of that down. And I feel like that really just boils down to like the number of deer you see and the quality of deer you see is pressure and access. Right.
Access is pressure.
It is the same thing, but people put this work into the food plot thing. And I feel like they almost think it's like a Band-Aid over how often they're out there.
Well, I think too, that, just there's apps now that you can really, become familiar with your ground. But we spent a bit of time on soil tests, but, one thing is to get to know your dirt. And by that, I mean, or get to know your ground, figuring out, not just, what your pH and your NPK requirements are, but figure out what kind of dirt you have. I mean, soil matters. I mean, if you've got sandy soil, I mean, guess what? You're not going to need clover there because it's not going to do very well. You're going to need, figuring out what type of soil. And then, you got to take a little bit of time to educate yourself, to figuring out what type of soil you got and what plants go best with that particular type. And it's, mm-hmm. And we say it on the bag and we say it on the website and that kind of stuff. So the information's there. But I think that a byproduct of that is by getting out there and studying your ground and figuring out, your soil and all that, it's going to pay off in other ways because you're going to be more familiar with your farm. You're going to learn your deer mm-hmm. movements and patterns and, behaviors that much, better. And then, now that we've got products like Borderline, you can even manipulate their travel. And we were just talking
that's the next level. I mean, starting to manipulate where they come out at. Sorry, Kurt.
You're good?
I'm still worked
on. Be better.
Snap at you.
If you can pinch them to where you need them to be, right. It's bow hunter's dream.
I mean, 10 years ago, it was just plant the plot. Now right. It's, okay, let's put the brassicas here and the clovers here. Now it's all of a sudden, now we got the screening and the funneling, and now we're going to channel them down here. Yeah. And you're telling the deer where you're they're going to go.
If you don't have any trees or anything to fall to bend them, you can literally plant in a triangle and pinch them to the tip of that triangle to make them walk around it and kill them right on that point.
Yep. I mean, well, that border line, you can use it just to hide yourself or to funnel that deer to where you want it to go.
Well,
wait till you guys see what we did on the test plot.
A very effective strategy with the border line is, you know, and we were just talking with somebody today. They planted it at a big, wide-open field, and they took borderline and planted it from one side to the other and let it, you know, grow up, whatnot. And they put a bow stand on each end of it so they could play winds. Well, then, right before the season, they mowed off the ends of it. Well, the deer, the borderline was thick enough. The deer weren't really going to walk through it, so they would come. But they couldn't see on the other side, obviously. They would walk right around the ends, to your point about the triangle, creating that gap. And last year, was it they filmed? Yeah, it had to be last year. They filmed a whopper come out in the food plot. I mean, just walked right around the tip and walked all the way, you know. I mean, and they got it all. They were lucky enough to get it all on film. But, you know, creating, you know, being strategic with it. But, you know, I think that, you know, I think a byproduct of food plots, back to that, is it's going to make you a better hunter on your own ground. And, you know, you might plan a food plot here this way this year, and you might learn from your mistakes. You might make a mistake, but be willing to, you know, recognize that and, you know, always be back to learning, you know, willing to learn. Mm-hmm. But
you're not going to get it right on the first year.
No. And
it's part of the fun of it, though.
It is.
It's not a one-year. You've got to have that always learning mentality. Oh, yeah. Just keep going.
For me, there's nothing more gratifying than hunting a deer all season long, failing on him, hunting him in the timber, and then in the late season you just back off and you sit over your work that you put in that summer and watch 20, 30 deer come out to your work and kill that deer on that plot. I mean, to me, that's like the ultimate.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It's the more time and effort you put into it, the sweeter it gets once you see your success.
You created that food.
And I think
we were talking about when you walked out a while ago that, you know, food plots or, you know, the visual reward that you get from it, that I did that, you know, and then if you kill your target deer or whatever deer in it, it's just that much more icing on the cake that, you know, you can really see the fruits of your labor.
Yep.
Well, I think guys think, you know, it's like short term success. Like I'm put it in right here, boom, then it's like done. It's like a buildup of, you know, a full season of you hunting, if you really do put your time in and you're diligent and careful about your entry and exit and pressure, you see deer do a lot more things out in the open than you would normally. Like, I don't fuck around in the timber, like, anymore, because I've learned, like, on my property, I'm not saying that's not a generalized term, on where I hunt, everyone. I don't fuck around the timber, and I've noticed a huge change in seeing deer and seeing bucks in daylight. Like, I tagged up for my first time ever last year before November. That's never happened to me before, but it's because I'm kind of rerouting how I do things as far as pressure is concerned, and going into this year, having that new entry exit mindset, knowing how things can work if I'm super careful, like almost less is more to a point in the off season. And then really I'm going to apply what I learned from this podcast into food plots, but still try to apply the same pressure or lack of pressure to the plots. I really feel, you know, maybe not this year on the plots, you know, I might have success on them, but I'm really thinking next year or the year after, and learning how, because one of the properties I'm going on is brand new, so I don't actually know for sure until I spend some time on how deer are using it. But I feel like say 3 years from now, I feel like I'm going to be seeing some rewards of homework put into it, of actually being there, spy point, trail cam, you know, education, and big time education from learning, like, what works here on my piece and which little mini kill plot, if you will, what works in what area on that property. It takes years. It might take 5 years before I'm like, fuck, I feel good altogether. But you can't get there if you don't start putting the effort in starting right now. And life happens, but you got to make an effort. It's not a lazy man's game to kill big deer. It's not easy. It's really what it boils down to. No,
everybody can get lucky, but
yeah, they can.
When you kill your target buck, very seldom is it luck. You know, you've put your time in, and you've done your homework and what it takes.
Yeah.
But something that just looking at our list here, but I know we're going really long, but I think it's really important to bring up is weeds. You know, because I think that a lot of guys have a lot of failure with weeds, and you know, there are herbicides that you can spray, and mowing helps, and all that. But where I'm going is to simply have an understanding that when you open up your ground, you know, we get calls like, man, I planted this stuff and you must have had a whole bag full of weeds. You know, that's because this is, you know, I've never seen this weed in my farm or in my area. It had to come out of your seed. Well, first of all, we can't legally do that. I mean, it's impossible.
It can't happen.
And, but you know, but you have to understand that, I mean, there are millions upon millions of weed seeds that are just laying dormant, waiting for their chance to grow.
When you work ground, you're going to get all kinds of different vegetation coming
up. You hit me with a number one time. What was that? The weed seeds laying dormant under.
Oh God. I don't know. It was from an article or something.
But I didn't know that.
Oh yeah,
millions.
I mean, work a random piece of dirt and leave it alone and see what happens.
Think about
vegetation that you've never seen.
What the fuck is that?
Really?
Think about a stand. Oh, yeah. Think about a stand of timber that is mature and you can see up in, you know, under the canopy, and they go in there and select cut it. Look at select cutting or look at hinge cutting. It's all about getting sunlight down on that forest floor, and as soon as it gets that sunlight, here come the briars, here come the, you know, the, you know, whatever kind of saplings or whatever's down there. But, you know, something, you know, when I'm talking about food plots here to understand is that all that weed seed is there looking for its opportunity. But, when you go out there and break that ground and say, if you go out there with your disc and you just bury it, and I'm going to break this, you know, ground up. If you go out there the next time and you bury it at the same level, you're going to be going a little bit deeper because you've already broken up that soil. So you're actually digging a little bit more. But the point is every time you break that soil up, you're bringing a whole new crop,
right?
Which is a very effective way if you've got the time to, you know, work the seed bank down, if you will, disc it, let it germ, disc it to kill it off, let it, you know, and so on and so on. But it takes time. And I mean, most people don't have the time to do that.
How many times would you say you would have to go over that to kill it out to where it's not just popping right back up?
I don't think you could put a number on that.
Weeds are persistent. Weeds are going to grow when nothing else grows. What I like to do is go in and work it, let new growth come up, and then zap it with whatever chemical is going to be safe to use.
And let that soil lock back up a little bit. Because it's not, you've already broke the compaction up. And, you know, that's a better strategy too, is to go in there and let that soil kind of crust over and kind of lock it back down. And then, but keep in mind, if you go back in there and open it, don't go as deep. Because you've got, you know, you've already broken that hard pan up, so you don't need to go as deep for one, but just, you know, work that top layer so you're not just digging up, but so much of that weed seed so you can keep that
It was that, like, resilient.
Most people, I mean, it is a big world down there.
I mean, it makes sense when you say it, from, like, thinking from the past when we've, like, turned up dirt. It's like, you know, one piece of hunt's like the most thistly shit you've ever seen. It used to be crop, you know?
Yeah. And that's something too. I mean, you know, to keep an eye on.
Field we were on earlier, I mean, it was covered in cockleburs that they had just turned up this spring. I mean, there hadn't been.
It was in beans and they were way outgrowing. Well, it was several fields, and there were some native grass fields and bean fields and not really the corn per se, but and it was way outgrowing the grass. It was outgrowing. I mean,
it's also been so wet over here that they haven't been able to get in.
They'll get in there and clean it up.
Yeah, it'll be clean.
But you know, that's kind of where I was going too. Is that, you know, keeping your plot sprayed or keeping them mowed. You know, you got to keep those plants from seeding out.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, you put all this effort into not continuing to open up the dirt and working on the seed bank within, you know, you're going to get drift. You're going to, there's all kinds of ways that weed seed is going to get back over there, but do your job and don't let it go back to seed, because you're just, you know, negating everything you're trying to do. But all that being said, I mean, I just, you know, that is a very common plot failure is weeds, and people and guys don't understand it. Mm-hmm. You know, they go out there and, you know, they literally think that it came in that bag of seed.
Well, I mean, if you don't know it,
right. I mean, and it's not, you can't, it's not that they're dumb or anything. It's just a lack of education type piece. Right. And, but you know, but to the point of this is to get that, some of that knowledge out there to everybody. Right. So that they do know that if they see that happening, you know why. And, you know, we've mentioned a few ways to try to prevent that.
Mm-hmm. We didn't put weed in your bag. Sorry.
I've got a question while we're on it, just real quick. So I've got a foundation clover plot started and it's coming up. I mean, you can see it's coming up nice, but I've been lazy. It's full of weeds. That's my, this is my question. It's far away from home, so I don't get to go down there and mow it a lot. I went in with post and I sprayed it, so it killed all the grasses. But I've got a bunch of broadleaves that are still way high. If I go in there and just keep mowing that thing off, eventually that clover is going to take over. And
I would, especially on a broadleaf.
Yeah.
Especially on a broadleaf. I mean,
where it gets thick enough where it won't let that broadleaf grow, right?
Yeah. Well, and I mean, what he's in two, what he's seeing growing right now are summer broadleaves. So right. If you keep it mowed down, you know, you're not going to shade out your foundation. Your competition's going to be less. And then when if you want to say limp it along to winter, they're going to die off on their own.
Right.
And then.
So don't give up on a plot. If it looks ugly right now, if you're seeing the desired species there that you planted.
Yeah. I mean,
don't give up on it yet.
Back to what we mentioned that earlier, the fact that, you know, it's okay for your plot to have weeds in it. I mean, it doesn't have to be a carpet of whatever out there. And, you know, obviously, you know, you'd like to keep your weeds at bay for, you know, for the obvious reasons of competition and so on. But no, I mean, you know, go back in there and knock it down. And I mean, you know, there's lots of guys that are dealing with that problem where they, you know, it's too wet to get in their plot when they're able
to,
or time or, you know, or whatever, but you can't let that discourage you, you know, and, cause the plots are very resilient and you can clean them up pretty fast. You can clean them up with, sometimes with just the mowing, sometimes with the mowing and hit it with herbicide, you know, a couple weeks later or whatever.
Do you have any herbicide you like to use? Like when you're looking at a clover plot like that, like I use post. Do you use anything other than post?
I would say my favorite for grasses would be clethodim.
Okay.
Yeah. And the clethodim, I mean, that could come under various different names, but your active ingredient is going to be clethodim.
Okay.
That would be my favorite. And then probably Imox is a very popular herbicide, and you know, I think you can get that knocks out brassicas, and I mean not brassicas but broadleafs and some grasses. And then for broadleaf specific, 2,4-D, as in Butyrac, not 2,4-D by itself. 2,4-D will smoke everything.
Right.
But I will say today we were at a farm. And they had tried to nuke a strip of foundation clover out so they could plant borderline in that spot. And he had sprayed a mixture of Roundup and 2,4-D.
Oof. And didn't get it?
And it was fighting its way back.
So I was going to ask this. Ross Bigger claims that you guys have a Roundup resistant clover. He's like, dude, I nuked the shit out of this thing and I could not kill that clover.
I would never put my name on that because it is, you know, it is, I wouldn't say that, but I mean, you do hear that from time to time that guys can, you know, some guys even recommend, I would never, you know, Roundup or glyphosate would be your active ingredient there would, you know, is a non-selective herbicide. That means it's designed to kill whatever it gets on the screen.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that being said, you know, there's guys that literally say, oh, a light rate around or glyphosate will knock it out, but it might make your clover a little bit sick, but why? What's the point of that when there are selective herbicides out there that aren't going to make it sick or stun it or potentially kill it, you know, just, just to go that route. So no, I wouldn't, definitely wouldn't make that claim, but hey, if it worked for you, I'm good for your luck. But I'd say you got lucky.
I remember you telling me about Ross. Say, I forgot all about that.
He was trying to kill it. He's like, I was going to plant something different in there. And I just went in there and roasted that thing. He said it was, that clover was still there. So he's just leaving it.
And that is the beauty of clover too. I mean, you see it on farm paths and it's a resilient.
It is.
Plant. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where you can go out there and nuke it on top. But I mean, you know, if it's ever gone to seed, it drops a pretty heavy seed burden down, and it spreads by rot. There's so many ways that that plant's reproducing itself that it's tough to get completely, especially if it's been out there in the field for a while. It's
not a bad thing for a deer hunter.
Absolutely not.
No, definitely not. It's most of my yard is clover. I wonder why.
That's why he got all the deer coming up in the yard.
That's what you're doing with all the foundation clover you're getting from.
Hey, listen, I didn't say that, all right?
There's no grass left.
I dropped a bag.
My bird feeder keeps spilling.
Oops. Now, I'm actually, I tore out a giant garden. I could have fed a small Amish community with the garden I had, and it just was too big, like too much to handle for my wife and I. So we tore everything out, and I'm getting ready to, like, I'm going to spray, kill the what has grown in it as of grass, and I'm going to till it up, and I'm probably going to plant clover in it, to be honest.
Do it.
See, there you go. You had a garden in there that you fought to keep the weeds out of, and all you took your plants out, and all of a sudden it's full of grasses.
Yeah.
They were laying there the whole time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, it's crazy. It's so when we bought the house, the people that we bought it from were retired. And had nothing to do but garden. Like I literally think that it's all they would have been able to do. Like that's how extreme their garden was. And we had a baby right off the rip when we moved in and didn't have time to like manage it. And I just kind of let it rip. And it was like 12 foot tall, some crazy shit. And I was like, sweet. So it's just kind of like, it's a privacy fence.
You got your own screen there.
Yeah, I live in the middle of nowhere. For the record, I don't have neighbors that are like staring at my weeds, which I wouldn't give a shit anyway because I'm trash. But by the way, I almost burnt my house down burning all the weeds. That was a fun story.
You almost blew your house up.
You got around the propane tank pretty hot, and I was getting scared. And, you know, New Windsor Fire Department, shout out to you guys. You guys are the real MVPs. that's a true story. Easter Sunday, baby. What's up?
The boys came through.
Yeah, the boys came through. I got them away from their in-laws. You're welcome.
The boys.
But anyway, yeah, that's me. That's some things I went through in my life.
That's for that low light session with
Joe. That's why I hate AC/DC.
21's just been a real shit show.
Dude, it's not been my
shit mess.
Thunderstruck was playing when that happened. That's why I hate AC/DC.
I'm hoping archery season really turns this fucking year around for me.
Your new food plots, Will.
I need it. I hope so. Dude, this has been a very educational episode for me. If nobody else got anything out of it, at least I did.
This is one of those episodes you'll listen to like 84 times and still pick up on it.
Gotta rewind.
I was slipping pages taking notes. I don't know if anybody else noticed that, but this pencil needs sharpening. We need to put an old school pencil sharpener here in the studio.
I got one right here.
Oh, there
you go.
See,
it's old school as it gets.
Yeah, it's a little rough. I think you sharpened this thing with your box blade there, but it's worked. But no, I love this episode. It was a ton of fun. I think there's going to be a lot of people that get a lot out of it.
I hope so.
I think it'll make people more comfortable with the idea of getting a soil test and applying what it needs.
Absolutely.
Like it's not just because you got a soil test, it doesn't mean that you open your wallet deeper to do more. It really is going to put more money back in your wallet.
Absolutely.
And I think this is good. I think this is real good. I thank you so much for coming all the way out here. I'm sure you're like, what the fuck am I getting into when you get into the studio?
Yeah, we don't know what Joe told you, but.
Especially when you walk in, we're at our.
Up pretty high.
For the price. Yeah. Old fashions, we're at our bar that we have, like right outside.
You guys are drinking old fashions. I walk in with cheesy gordita crunches from Taco Bell. Like, let's party. And Daryl's like, what the hell?
Hey, listen, I'm a little upset you didn't bring us any.
If you have a chance to be a guest and come in person, this is pretty slick studio.
Well, thank you.
We busted our ass last one.
It's worth making the trip versus doing it via phone.
It's more interactive.
Absolutely. Oh,
yeah. It makes for a better podcast. You know, so this is your first podcast ever.
It is.
That surprises me because you're like a natural.
You did way better than Jackson because Jackson like clammed up and hid in the corner.
Hey.
You gotta, we're used to like everything a little bit, you know, and we're used to more people. A lot of people shut down, not that they shut down cause they're like nervous, but I feel like there's like, they don't feel like they can talk like they think they should or want to. And that's what we want. That makes our job easier. And you just absolutely murdered it. So
I guess I'm quiet, but, I guess if you get me going, it's,
you're passionate.
Probably,
man.
Talk too much. And, yeah.
Well, that's what, I mean, we, on the way over here, I literally said, this is like, not that I'm a huge Howard Stern fan, but I respect the way that he,
well, he's an OG.
Does his interviews.
Yeah.
And I see a lot of that in you.
Oh, thank you.
I really do.
Thank you.
And I'm not just kissing your ass here. No. Buy me a drink.
Sounds like it.
I'll buy you a drink. But
shut up.
But no. But I do
I mean, you have a way of, you know, just having the conversation and opening up and making people feel comfortable. So.
Yeah. Well, it's our team.
Joe is your Beetlejuice, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. We need, to get more live bands in, though. Yeah, we're going to be like Howard Stern.
We need live bands and more like porn stars to like sit on weird things.
ACDC is going to be the first band.
Shitty fucking music, dude. ACDC, get something better.
It just keeps going.
Come on. Metallica, where are you at?
ACDC or Nickelback?
Nickelback, dude. Fuck ACDC.
Damn.
Oh, they're Canadian.
Listen.
Look at this photograph.
I like them both.
Hey, I'll be honest. I chose Nickelback just to aggravate people. Both can jump off a cliff, for the record.
Next podcast, maybe podcast 500, we all sit down and talk about our top 10 bands.
At the end.
Yes.
But I will say,
Joe's got
to
be here for
that. I would much rather listen to 10 songs straight of Nickelback than AC/DC. That's just me.
I don't know if I could pick 10 Nickelback songs I would listen to.
Leader of Men.
Here's the thing, Joe.
Yeah.
I have to, since we're at the end of like the educational part of this, you have to understand, like, if someone's like, Kurt, what music do you listen to? I can't just be like, I like country, or I like rock. Like,
he's diverse.
I listen to the extremes of every genre.
Yeah, you do.
So like, if I listen to country, I'm listening to like
mostly classical.
No, not even that.
Classical, like Beethoven.
Yeah. Like if it's country, it's like the real shit. If it's metal, it's like, this guy worships Satan, even though I don't, for the record, but you'd think I would. If I listen to rap, you'd think like I was some sort of gangbanger. Like, I just like the extremes of every genre.
I'm with you.
Because if I dive into a genre, like, I want to know, like, I'm in that genre. If you listen to radio country, you're like, is this pop or is it country? Like, Luke Bryan's kind of like, it's a rap beat with him singing about painting on blue jeans for kids that are in high school. It's weird. It's actually, it's awkward if you listen to it. Is he down? Depending on blue jeans. Down by the river on the tailgate and a Bud Light in my hand. It's the same shit every country music song.
You know it, no.
It's pretty good, right?
Oh, shit, fuck. That was good.
This went off the rails hard.
Yeah, this took a turn.
Got my pit stoppers on and my hey dudes on. Jesus. And I'm muddy down by the creek. Won't you get on down with the whitetail buck? I'm sitting with Joe Umphreys on TikTok.
Man, damn, real right there.
That was fucking jingle right there.
You like that?
I'm going to drop that beat.
Listen, dude, I'm not saying it, but
why does everybody hate on my TikTok, man?
Because you're 40?
Easy.
Easy.
Because you're 40?
Joe and I took offense to that.
Yeah, I'm 39.
I was going to make you a TikTok country song. You want me to
quit
quick?
Taking videos of me sleeping.
Hit me.
Can I make it? I'm 40 years old. My life is washed up. And my wife and I are on TikTok. We take TikToks of our kids. And we're trying to say she's to fit in with the young crowd.
That's accurate.
You like that?
That's accurate.
That's accurate.
I actually love your TikToks, Joe, for the record.
I know you do. You like every one of them, fucker.
I'm just mad that I'm not good at it like you.
I don't even have TikToks.
You guys didn't know I was a country singer, did you?
Did not.
Might have a future.
It was pretty bad.
That sounded more like AC/DC than a country song.
that big ass tree fell through our barn, and I'm like videoing
That's
it.
A country Jamie, song in itself.
Jamie's right like, you're going to make a TikTok, aren't you? I was like, damn right I am.
We're here.
That's a country hit on 103.7 or whatever the hell, that's our station. A big ass tree fell through our barn.
A big ass.
Yeah, the old oak got granddaddy's barn.
And through my heart. Well,
we were living a country song that day because my dad's out there in like, you know, grandpa shorts and rubber boots with a chainsaw just going to town.
Oh, dude, getting it.
He was rocking. We needed you there.
There's
to be
a song.
Dude, if I would have been there, me and Rod would be fucking it up.
Well, most Doug said this whole podcast.
We need to hurry up and end this podcast before it goes any deeper.
Let's go.
But thank you guys. This was fun. This was a good time.
Appreciate it.
I'm glad we had like this side of the table on the on my left was like, except for Doug, full of intelligence. And then Doug included on this side.
So
and then,
pretty much just
Doug. Just you two.
Just I was just trying to point fingers here, but yeah, you're exactly right.
I knew what you were doing.
We knew what you were about. Should we close her out there? You guys got anything to like shut down? Where can people find, if they have food plot questions, where can people get a hold of you?
As always, you know, you can go to bigtime.com. That little annoying messenger thing pops up. That goes right to me.
Legitimately.
Like, again, don't message me at 3 a.m. expecting me to answer you right then.
Oh, I'm going to do it tonight.
I'm doing too.
I know you guys do all the time. I can see where it comes from.
Oh.
I'm going to get a burner phone.
What does that mean?
There's no fun in that.
Like, Doug literally drunk messaged me on Big Time. It's weird. Like,
well, I want fucking answers, dude.
This is when I think about it.
You can get a hold of us there. I mean, you can, you know, Facebook Messenger, you know, we'll answer that. Instagram, send me a damn TikTok Messenger. And, you know, if it gets too detailed, you have very detailed plot questions, you know, I can get you in touch with Daryl. We're happy to help anybody. We'll get you going. That's what we're here for.
Pictures help.
Yeah, send some pictures.
Don't tell Doug that.
Easy.
I love it. You guys are the best. This is great. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
Boys, anything? Anything?
Nope. Had a great time, guys.
Yep.
Yeah, it was a good time. Awesome.
Thanks for coming.
Everyone, thank you so much for tuning in. Hope you learned something. Hope you enjoyed this, even though we're all idiots, except for Daryl and Austin. And you know what to do. Go shoot your bow. We love you.
Mondays, head offshore with Captain Scott Walker and Steve Roger for breathtaking deep sea adventures.
Coming to me.
Double. He's jumping.
Oh!
Look at that belly.
Don't miss Mondays with Into the Blue, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern.
Tell a few fish stories along the way.
On Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.